Hey, James.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Aiken City Council work session on April 9th, 2007. And we appreciate everyone being here with us. And we have one item on our work session. Has to do with safety issues on Marlboro Street. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. The one item is a long-standing issue. We have met with citizens in that area, different ones over a period of time since I've been with the city, concerning the fact that on Marlboro Street, which ties into Two Notch Road, it's used by several residents and citizens in our area as a shortcut to get from the south side to the north side. And although it's a dirt road and it's rather bumpy at times, they still go through that area at a rate of speed that is higher than what we'd like to see. For that reason, we met with a group of citizens. There was probably about 20 of us all together, three staff members and the rest of the citizens at that area, to determine what, if anything, we could do to work with the State Highway Department to make this area safer by slowing the traffic down and trying to get people to come to a stop at that four-way intersection where Marlboro, Two Notch, and Grace Avenue all come together. After a short discussion, we realized that there's probably not a lot we could do as long as it's maintained as a state roadway. The basic reason is the state has a law that says you cannot have a 10-mile-an-hour change in speed from one area to the next area. In other words, you can't go from, let's say you're on a road and it's 55, you can't go from 55 down to 30 miles an hour all of a sudden, because they've called that a speed trap. For that reason, they set up a law that says you could drop 10 miles at an increment. Seeing that south boundary is 35 miles an hour, the lowest speed limit we could put on Marlboro is 25. And we would like to see the individuals going down Marlboro at 15 miles an hour, which is what we have posted in most of the Horse District area. We'd also like to see several speed humps be placed in that area. We tried them on Two Notch Road, the dirt section, and they worked well for a day to 2 days, and then they got covered up by the dirt because the dirt keeps moving and it fills in around it, so they really were not effective. So to get the safety features that we feel were needed and to put the speed humps in to lower the speed limit, we are coming to you tonight to request that one block section of Marlboro Street between Grace Avenue and South Boundary be turned over from the State Highway Department to the City of Aiken for maintenance purposes. We feel that we could then do a number of things in working with the citizens of the area with the speed humps and to lower the speed limit to effectively take care of a lot of the safety issues that are at this location. So we're here to bring that to your attention. Bob White is in the audience who organized the group that day. He'd be happy to add things if you need to. But I kept this a very short item because I thought it was pretty intuitive that this was the best measure to take to take care of this one area. And just to go one step further, we had met probably a year or two before this with Rhett Revere, who owns the property that would be at the southwest corner of Grace and Two Notch Road. And people had come through that area on more than one occasion at a fairly high rapid speed, were not able to make the corner, and they went right through his fence, which is very disturbing. So again, we cannot be out there with patrol, police in the area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but by putting the speed humps in there, it will control the speed through the area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Bob, would you like to say anything? Okay, you're certainly welcome.
One of the things is, because of the horse trailers in that area, we will have to work with the citizens in that area to make sure the speed hump can effectively slow the traffic down, but can also allow the horse trailers to get over it. So there will be some working through as to, it may not be the typical speed hump as we've seen in some other areas, because we don't want the trailers especially to bottom out on it.
My name is Robert White. I live at 435 Orangeburg, and my property, my paddock's back up onto Marlboro, and my neighbor is Mike Rubin, who has a contiguous property to me, and his land defines the intersection across from Tiger Revere. I would just tell you that Mike has had two incidents of traffic wiping out the fencing in his farmhouse paddock, and it's that's a problem. And I think the real problem that it poses to the people in the horse district is early in the morning at 6, we have the racehorses going down Grace Avenue to the other track, and that's a commute period, and they're not done training really until 9-ish. You know, a lot of it's done by 8, but by 9, so you can see we intersect the traffic flow there. And the rest of the day, as soon as the horses are off of the training track, we have a general understanding with the training track that those of us that have sport horses then use the area for taking sport horses to the polo fields and to the other fields and to Brett Revere's jumping field, and there's a lot of sport horse activity going on between December and April. That's probably the same period of time, maybe a little longer for the racehorses, but that intersection is particularly vulnerable to the entry of horses at traversing on Grace Avenue. And Mike Rubin actually was almost hit on a horse a few weeks ago. And obviously we have some very valuable horses going through, but the real issue here is the safety. We personally have 4 teenagers in training at the old H&D Stables right now. They're homeschooling and training until the season's over, which is April, and they're trafficking that on horses probably 5-6 times a day on a different horse. We probably have 2 or 3 incidents a week, and I got to tell you, good conscience says it's time that we do as much as we can to stop the run-throughs. The real issue is the run-throughs are blind, and if the horse is in the middle of the intersection, you don't see them till you're on top of them. And so I think good diligence right now says we do whatever we can to, quote, slow it down and make it become quite aware that you got to go slow. You realize during the off-season, there's essentially nobody there. And so you can get into the habit of, quote, rolling through, you know, and without causing really a lot of concern. But the bottom line is the season starts in December, certainly at the latest, and it extends to April. Those same people that have been rolling through in the non-use months create a problem during that time. So my comment would be, it's probably a smart thing to do, but there's been a lot of talk about doing something for the last couple of years. The neighbors all got together, and as you see, we have most of them to sign, many of the residents of the area signed. It's trafficked by racehorses at 6, sport horses from 10 on, and carriages from 10 through the rest of the day. I know the city ran a traffic reading on that for a few days prior to our meeting at the intersection, and I think we were averaging, which will surprise you, over 600 cars a day on Marlboro. You know, that's a lot of cars. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be there, but if you're going to be there, boy, you better really control them, because we're vulnerable. The horses are vulnerable, whether they're riding, racing. It's just not a good scene. So anything you can do to help us, and I was transferring the property to the city and moving that responsibility to the city is probably the best thing for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bob, thank you.
Thank you.
Some of these people that are running through all the time, yeah. are there some of the same people doing it daily? And
yeah, I think you'd have to say most of them are local, and to be honest, some might even be people involved in the horse district, you know, like grooms and trainers and whatever, and a lot of service people. You know, it's easy in the off season when you're running some kind of a service truck, it's just a difficult situation, and I think you have to be aware that that's going on. I think most of them are afternoon and evening commuters, and certainly the speed is well over the...
In a hurry to get home or wherever they're going.
Yeah, and it's a shortcut. It intersects south boundary. Right. I understand why they're there. Right. And we have our best season. Our best time is when we have a lot of rain and there's so many humps on that road that you can't...
That's right.
Without bottoming out, you can't go. But absent that, there's really no way to control them.
Right. At all. Well, sounds very justified. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Roger. It would be a possibility to put a larger stop signs like we did at Boardman.
Yeah. Once it becomes our intersection, we could do unlimited number of things to work with that intersection. We might even take the very end of Two Notch as it's going north to Grace and put some asphalt down there enough to get a speed hump at that location. Because it's really the horses that are going down Grace Avenue from the one section to the other that are the most vulnerable. So it's not even just the traffic that's going southbound on Marlboro Street, but it's also traffic that's coming up northbound on Two Notch that we have to somehow figure out how to slow them down.
No, not slow them down as much as they're not stopping either. One big problem.
Okay. It sounds like we have consensus. Add it to the agenda. Officially do it next meeting. Okay, very good. Thank you for that. We want to make sure everything's safe as possible out there. Okay. Before we get into our regular meeting, just let me make two comments here. Beverly Clyburn's not with us tonight because she's sick, I think. Vertigo, Bill? She's going through some vertigo problem. But Bill is here, and with their niece, Miko Marconi, from Brooklyn, New York. She's 14 years old, and she's in the ninth grade. And we're glad to have you. Miko, would you stand up and... Would you like to say something?
No.
Well, we're happy that you're here, and thank you. And Bill, thank you for bringing Miko to our meeting. And we have a new representative from the Augusta Chronicle with us, too, Michelle. And I'm sorry, I forgot your last name. I didn't write it down.
Guffey.
What?
Guffey.
Michelle Guffey, and we're glad to have you too. And you're just recently to this area, right? You were in Texas before? And that's Tony sitting next to you, in case you haven't met him yet. With Aiken Standard. Okay. You're welcome. Anytime. Okay, we'll go right to our city council meeting now, and we're happy again to have everyone here with us. We always appreciate that. And this is April 9th, 2007, and Aiken City Council meeting. And if you would, stand with us for our prayer and our pledge of allegiance.
Let us please bow our heads in prayer. O God, our Father, once again we pause to give thanks. We thank you, dear Heavenly Father, for the gift of your Son who died on the cross for us and for our sins. We give thanks to you, dear Father, for life and for strength and for health and for our families and for this wonderful, wonderful city that you have given us to enjoy. We thank you for the great volunteers that we have, for our city staff, for the officials who serve in their capacity, who sometimes feel that it appears to be a thankless job, but nevertheless you called us to serve and we serve. We ask that as we discuss the agenda for this evening, that we go with our hearts and our decisions and help us to make the best decisions that impact all in this community. In your name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda today? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Next item is the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session of March 19th and the work session and regular meeting of March 26, 2007. Any discussion necessary? Yeah. If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passage unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have one appointment tonight, and that's the reappointment of Charles Newton to the Environmental Committee by Mr. Wells, and that's the one we have here tonight.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to make a motion that we reappoint Mr. Charles Newton to the Environmental Committee.
A second.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passage unanimously. Item.
I'm sorry. Mr. Mayor, I have some reappointments I would like to mention. Mr. Channing Jones, I would like to reappoint to the Aiken Housing Authority. Julie Adams, I'm happy to say, has agreed to re-up on the Arts Committee. Mm-hmm. And Joni Schischler will also reappoint, wants to be reappointed to the Accommodation Tax Committee.
Very good. Are there any others? Okay.
Now, one of the things, Council, if you do look on that appointment sheet, is one of the commissioners, which is appointed in general by Council, is up. We have not asked Matt McLaren if he wanted to reserve again. He has been a long-term serving. Sarah's shaking her head. He would be willing to if you'd like to. But again, that's not by any one individual. It's collectively. So at any time that you would like to go ahead and look at either reappointing him or if you had someone else you'd like to appoint to that position.
Well, somebody have to make a motion for that? Or?
Yeah, go ahead.
I do make a motion for Matt.
Mr. Mayor, I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor?
Okay. Thank you very much.
I have a question. Has the building codes appeals committee met this year?
We try to have them meet once a year, usually at the end of the year, unless an issue comes up, to just to meet to see if there's anything in general that they need to discuss. Again, it's only when a builder has an objection or a concern that does the committee meet.
But so they've had a meeting?
They should have had one. I'm looking for Bill Huggins. The end of last year for the Building Codes Appeal Committee. So unless something comes up, there was a period of time for several years they did not meet at all. And based on comments that council had and they had, we decided, well, once a year we'll at least sit down together and see if there are any issues. And so we do meet once a year now.
Are they included in the volunteers' luncheon this year?
Yes, they are.
And if I'm not mistaken, by law, we have to have such a committee.
We have to have a committee, yes.
And what does that tell us about the fact that they don't have to meet very often?
Well, again,
that's good news, isn't it?
It's good news, but it's also the fact that probably at the time this committee was established, the international building codes were not as universally used as they are today, and there's probably not as much of a need because each city had their own individual codes for buildings, and now we pretty much all across the United States use the same codes.
Very good. Okay, the second item is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance for bed and breakfast facilities. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title. It's an ordinance amending section 3.3.4.C of the City Aiken zoning ordinance regarding bed and breakfast and meeting facilities. This is something that we've been discussing for several months now. It came up due to the fact that Rose Hill, which is on a 4-acre-plus site right off of Barnwell Avenue, wanted to consider having dinners and outdoor entertainment a couple of times a month. We looked at how that could possibly be allowed, and after several discussions and looking at it, we decided that the best way would be to go ahead and amend this so that in this particular area, the bed and breakfast could be allowed. Now, there has been some discussion, and I know you all have gotten some email, and the fact that currently this ordinance would allow the special exception in RSS, RML, RMH, limited professional, and limited business. Their property is owned LP, and in talking to Steve and Eva today, they have no problem in whatever council does, but one way you could look at this would be that you approve this for those zones for everything but residential areas. And again, you could always review this at some later date. The only other property that we could think of, and I'm not suggesting that this piece of property would ever become a bed and breakfast or anything else, but if you look throughout the city at what property or single-family home is on a 4-plus acre and is on the historic register, and it really limits the number of particular properties. The only other one that we could come up with was Joy Cottage. And again, I don't want to rumor anything to start that. That's any kind of suggestion. But it is in a residential zone. So if council wanted to feel a little bit more secure in this, you may want to consider just limiting this to the limited professional, limited business, and office areas. So also in this, just because you approve this tonight does not mean that Rose Hill or any other properties that would fit this criteria would be allowed to do this. They still need to go ahead and get a special exception through BZA. And I think that's important because that way there will always be a public hearing. So if somebody posted their property, said that they would like to go ahead and allow meals to be served and also to allow outdoor concerts of any type, there would have a opportunity for the citizens to speak on the subject through BZA and a public hearing. So before tonight, you did approve on first reading this ordinance, which is now the second reading and public hearing to amend the zoning ordinance for bed and breakfast meeting facilities as shown in section 3.3.4C of the zoning ordinance.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. So if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Just come up to our mic and introduce yourself, tell us your name and your address.
Jenny Stoker, 331 Kershaw Street, Southeast, and I guess mine were some of those emails that were going around. I was concerned with this expansion of the bed and breakfast in the residential areas, and if you will, you know, consider, as Roger said, leaving it, you know, the changes only in the LP and limited business and office, I think that would make a lot of people feel more secure. A lot of people that I've talked with in the Horse District, although as Roger says, at this point there's only one property that might qualify in the residential stable district. The National Registry is not set in stone, and it could change, and this will just make one more step into in the process, I think. To me, the residential areas, as you know, I keep harping on the fact they need to be residential and not let businesses encroach that would add extra traffic and extra congestion and that sort of thing. So if you would change this to just the business zones, that would make a lot of people very happy. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. Were there any comments or questions of Jenny?
What about just changing it in the zone that we need to change it in now? Because if we just changed it in the LP zone, then if someone had a proposal for an office zone or some other zone that was adjacent to some other, well, it's all going to be adjacent to some other property, then there would be a chance for a public hearing at City Council and a public hearing at BZA rather than just one night. Mm-hmm. And I think some of these things, I mean, I think we've, it would make it even... It would see how many things on this have changed in order to make it more reasonable for everyone. And I think that if we just limited it to what
to
we
that
need
one
at
zone,
this moment,
I think that's a good idea. And I spoke with some of the people in the Planning Commission, and they, I guess that idea had been talked about, you know, along the way. And I think that would be, I mean, that would certainly be good.
I know no reason not to do that either.
And then, I mean, anybody can always ask for a zoning change. There's no way we can eliminate that, and I don't know that we want to. One other thing, I have a question. On the square footage, the amount of retail square footage, is that still going to be a percentage? Roger.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was looking to answer one of Mr. Smith's questions.
Okay.
Rose, could you please?
You know, with right now, a certain percentage can only be retail square footage, right, in certain zones? What about the LP zone? Is that one of those where, remember that was something turned down because it was more than the right amount of...
That I don't know. I'm not too sure, Ed, if you have your zoning book with you or...
He always has.
Always.
If we approve some limited retail business, which I guess this does, and I'm assuming this is going to be retail business, and maybe we, let me see if it says it or not. Retail sales are permitted to guests and their invitees and attendees at other meetings and events. How much is there a percentage of the space of the property that can be used for a retail business, or is it, could the whole thing be used for that?
In the LP zone, 100% of a lot could be used for a permitted use. There's no restriction on...
All right. Mm-hmm. But we do say here that the retail sales are directly associated with the use and Aiken. I don't know what that means. Look at number 7.
Retail sales are permitted to guests and their invitees and attendees at meetings and other events for items directly associated with the use and or Aiken,
you know, that means
gallery that. Or exhibition yep. space is allowed. Does that make sense?
The current regulations limit the retail sales to things directly associated with the particular property, Rose Hill, for example. This would also allow the sale of retail items associated with Aiken.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just think that we probably just need to reword that a little bit. It says associated with the property and or Aiken, right?
I think once the line
directly associated with the use or
final draft Aiken.
And when you say Aiken gallery or exhibit space is allowed, you're talking about maybe prints or paintings of individuals either by Aikenites or are associated with Aiken?
I assume that's correct. I mean, this is an idea from the owner of Rose Hill, wording adopted by the Planning Commission, and I would assume that's the intent.
Okay. I mean, that's the way I would interpret it.
Well, we have Steve and Neva here with us, so we might as well, let's get this cleared up now if we can. Steve, you want to address it? Thank you, Ed.
Good evening. Stephen Mueller, 221 Greenville Street, Northwest. The general idea was to make available a gift shop and with items for use for guests who would come there. So if they needed to toothbrush or if they need something else. And then a gift shop being meeting the needs for commemorative items, which would have to deal with, you know, in the same sense of the property, like in the Aiken area, because that's what people are interested in. So those are the two ideas, and I agree, it's kind of awkward trying to actually nail down that language, but I wanted it limited so that the sense wasn't that it could be all-out retail, so that it was limited just to the use of a guest who was coming there, or it was limited to items that they could purchase in a commemorative way in a gift shop that had to do with Rose Hill or with Aiken.
Steve, a guest could be someone who might come for dinner or your moonlight event that you have and see something perhaps that they want to get?
Yes, sir.
Especially if you've got a gallery and what have you, maybe a picture or something there, an artist rendition of something. They could do that. That would be a guest.
That's right.
A guest to your facility.
That's correct.
Not necessarily overnight.
Right. That's right. But the idea is not to expand it into other areas of retail sales, to have it limited in such a way that everyone understood that it was specifically for this.
Okay. Is that clear to everybody?
Let me just add, and Steve knows this, I have had, we frequently have folks in from the Medical University of South Carolina who had the privilege of going to Rose Hill, and on several occasions, Steve has given them tours of the ground, but they would have loved to have had commemorative items to take back with them, so it's in those cases that you want to let them have something to take back with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions, comments? Okay, Steve, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to? Okay.
Sorry, I have a question about the retail sales, because when I look in my use regulations, there's no other retail sales allowed in limited professional that I can see. They're all, you know, not allowed. So,
for what it's worth, restaurants aren't allowed in limited professional
right,
either.
Exactly. So I'm concerned, although, you know, we all want Rose Hill to do, you know, well and do the best it can, I'm concerned when you zone, you know, change the zoning to accommodate one person that you or one business, that then we are able to restrict restaurants and other retail things in limited professional only in connection with a bed and breakfast. If someone came up and said, I have, you know, I want to do a restaurant in limited professional, could we tell them, no, you can't, that it has to be with a bed and breakfast? That's not a...
with the limitation on this use being on such a large tract of land, it should reduce some of the concerns about restaurants imposing on nearby neighbors, since there is so much land that you know would be able to surround the use. I think the thought here is that this use probably is going to have very little impact on the neighbors, if any.
Right.
And that's because it's such a large tract of land.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, typically, like a law office or a doctor's office that's in limited professional, I mean, you can't have the situation where it backs right up to a residential neighborhood. And so you do have more of a valid reason, I think, for not allowing a restaurant or places that stay open later than 5 or 6 o'clock at night in those particular areas. But because this is limited to such large tracts of land, I think that is a reasonable way to cushion that blow.
And we can hold them to that. And is there any question, as Jane just wondered, what percentage of the business or the property or, you know, whatever is going to be retail sales? If they, you know, there's a ton of South Carolina stuff that you can sell if you have a gift shop. I mean, are we going to end up with a major retail outlet there? I mean, it may not be their choice, but it, you know, it may mushroom into you know, quite a retail business there.
I think Ed touched on that question. He answered that there's no specific limitation. Is that right, Ed?
Correct.
On square footage.
Is that how you
well
want?
that's what the expert told us.
But your question is, do we want to make there a limitation?
Yeah, should there be some limitation, or is this going to turn into, you know, at some point having a major retail shop there?
It would have to be changed in a fall LP. If you're going to change it. Does it say that you can't?
I'm sorry, Ed. I don't know the answer off the top of my head. Does the zoning ordinance say that no retail is allowed in LP?
That's correct.
They're offering, in this case, they're limiting the retail sales just to, I would assume, postcards or something that would have Rose Hill's picture on it or something like that, or Aiken memorabilia.
And by the sense of that, I think to me it conveys some assurance that it wouldn't mushroom, that there's only so much you could think of if you had a teacup or if you had a print. I can't envision how the worst case scenario of something three stories high could happen with commemorative items for Aiken or for Rose Hill.
But if council wanted to, one way of doing that would be, say, 1,000 square feet or 10,000 or 100,000 or, you know, whatever you want. But you could put a limit on this, because depending on how you look at this, when you start talking about things from the Aiken gallery or exhibit area, I mean, it could expand to a lot of different things depending on how much retail space you want to have. Mm-hmm. So if there is that concern, you could always put a limit on that.
Mm-hmm. I have two buildings that could potentially in part be used. I couldn't envision it ever being used to its maximum, but one's 1,500 square feet and one's 1,000. So if you were to say 2,500, you know, if that made everyone comfortable, that would be a high ceiling for me to ever imagine. 2,500 square feet.
That's a lot of gifts and things.
No, yes, it is.
I'm just thinking in terms of a gallery where you're just showing things.
I'm just talking about the size of the building itself.
Right.
You know, even
right.
if there were two items in there, the building's still the size of the building.
Yeah. Well, let's get one thing straight. What Roger said sounds good, but is it a legal thing to do?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, we can restrict the size.
I mean, you could. You know, not necessarily say all of the 2,500 square feet that the Muellers have available for retail space. You could say that no more than 500 square feet, 1,000 square feet, and it could be 500 square feet within the 1,000 square feet. I mean, half of the 1,000 square foot building could be used for retail, while the other half may be used for some other purpose.
But is this really skirting the issue here with LP? Are we really making up something here that only applies to Rose Hill, and is it the right thing to do?
Well, Mr. Mayor, what I'm trying to, I know that whatever policy we enact, we vote on, we have to consider what will be coming to us in the future. But right now we're dealing with this piece of property, and we have to think of both now and the future. I don't think the Muellers, with this quality piece of property, is going to place anything that is going to be damaging or harmful to the community or to the property itself. We have a huge tract of land, over 4 acres. And based on this ordinance, it states that, 1.75, that we're talking about, that you have to have this much space? 1.75. The minimum acres to be eligible would increase to 1.75. So we're not talking...
Four, right.
So we're not talking about a small tract of land that this is going to go on. The property is extremely private. The neighbors embrace the Rose Hill without any hesitation or any problems. They communicate well with the neighborhood. So I don't see the... the limitations that we're imposing on this piece of property in terms of providing something that's going to be an attraction and welcomed by the folks that are staying overnight there and that are dining. I just don't see the threat and the harm. I'm just trying to figure out why are we so nitpicky with this?
I think we haven't allowed retail sales in LP before. Trying to be careful about it. I don't think Stephen's gift shop is going to involve, or Eva's gift shop is going to involve more than 1,000 square feet.
Right.
I can't even imagine that. I'd hate to limit gallery space, frankly, because I think you might have a wonderful exhibition that would be there. It might even some outdoor things on your land. I'm not really worried about the gallery space. I'm more worried about the retail. I mean, if I'm worried about anything, I really think this is pretty I think this is adequate, and I think it's going to protect things.
But if we were to, say if Stephen were to have a painting over a mantle in the dining room, that is potentially for sale. I mean, now, how are you going to include that in the space? That's my concern. You know, and I honestly think that, these folks have been in town for many years, and they've done some tremendous things with Rose Hill, and I don't see that turning around in the next few years. And I'm not concerned about Rose Hill turning into a Walmart. Maybe this is just me, but I'm not. I mean, we've got a quality piece of property. We're trying to make a move that's going to help these people financially better the property from even where it is today. And I think we should go ahead with it. And frankly, I'm concerned about limiting that. Number one is every property that's over 4 acres that's in LP that is a bed and breakfast, that potentially came would have to go before the BZA and have a public hearing. And frankly, I don't think there's that many 4-acre properties in LP that, you know, would come in and ask for retail space in that LP zone.
I think you're right. I think there's only one. And I think we all realize that the Muellers are, you know, doing everything, you know, the way we would want anybody to do it. But, you know, as Stephen knows, he's not going to live forever. And, you know, I think that if you can, you know, if there are often things, you know, slip through the cracks here in this room because there's so much trust and so much love and everybody knows everybody's going to do the right thing. And occasionally you get somebody in here that's not going to do the right thing. And we know it's not Steve, but we don't know what the next person may do. And I think if the intent of LP is to not have retail sales, then we should be able to limit the amount of space used for retail sales, even with a bed and breakfast. And I don't think that's going to hurt his feelings at all. I think we could come up with a reasonable thing that would, you know, that would make everybody happy. I think that would be lovely.
What's that?
Could we suggest 1,500 square feet for retail space?
And that might not include gallery, or, you know, you could take that picture off the mantelpiece and walk it into the cash register and sell it, or, you know, whatever. But I just hate to leave these doors hanging open.
I agree.
Right. Well, the only reason I raise the question is just to get it on the table. Let's talk about it. I've been there. It's lovely what you're doing, and I am so pleased. We all saw that place sit for years and years in a rundown state, and you all have done a wonderful, wonderful job restoring it. And it's even more gorgeous than I ever thought it would be. When I went over there, and by happenstance, Steve, you showed me some of the areas, and so if we can agree on just 1,500 square feet.
You don't want to use both your buildings, like one for a gallery and one for a...
Oh, yes.
One was 1,000 and one was 1,500, right?
Well, now if we just talk about just the retail space itself just being limited to 1,500 square feet.
And that's okay. The size of that big building?
The one that's directly behind the stables is on Edgefield Avenue. And see, I have this other building I refer to as the Art Center. As you were mentioning, if I have a painting somewhere else. But just for the actual retail space, if I can imagine something actually sat on the shelf and there was a cash register, right? Keeping that one spot confined there so we would all know that it couldn't spread out other ways. I'm comfortable with that.
But you can still have galleries and exhibitions in other parts.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else like to speak on the issue? If not, it's back to City Council then for consideration. Do we have a motion? Second.
I move we accept this ordinance on second reading, limiting it, however, only to the limited professional zone, and adding that the retail space occupy a maximum of 1,500 square feet.
I'll second it.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, just
is
for...
Is that everything?
Yes,
just
go ahead.
For clarification purposes, I had made a note that limit the retail space to 1,500 square feet, which can be located in more than one space within the property.
Which could be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Just so there's no question that you could have 500 feet in one building and 500 in another building.
That's fine.
Okay. Any discussion? We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you all for your work again, Steve and Eva. Thank you for your efforts there. It's beautiful. Item 3 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to rezone a portion of the property at 1129 South Boundary Avenue Southeast from RS 15 to Horse District HD. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone certain property owned by Ann Pisano and located at 1129 South Boundary Avenue from residential single family RS 15 to Horse District HD. In order for the owner to combine the property to a like zoning, or to combine it, they have to have like zoning by changing this back portion of the property of 0.159 acres. They will have a like zoning and they combine the properties together. This was approved unanimously by the Planning Commission, and this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone the rear portion of property consisting of 0.159 acres at 1129 South Boundary Avenue from RS 15 to HD.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion?
I move that we adopt this ordinance on the second reading to rezone the property at 1129 South Boundary from RS 15 to the Horse District.
Second.
Okay, second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at 303 Charleston Street Southeast from General Business, GB, to RS 8 Residential. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to rezone a lot consisting of 0.36 acres of land owned by Legacy Design LLC from General Business to Residential Single Family RS 8. This property was formerly occupied by a commercial quick shop. It was demolished a short time ago. They'd like to put up a single family residential property next to a couple other properties that they also acquired. The Planning Commission approved this unanimously, and this is the second reading of public hearing of ordinance to rezone property at 303 Charleston Street Southeast from General Business to RS 8.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to recommend that we approve the second reading of this ordinance to rezone property at 303 Charleston Street from General Business to RS 8 Resident.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Jarvis, very much for what you're doing. Item 5 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex and approve concept plan for property at Powderhouse Road and Old Powderhouse Road. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 57.83 acres of land, more or less owned by Mary Taylor McLean, Unified Credit Trust, and Brandenburg Properties into zone same planned residential PR. At the last meeting, council had asked that they would consider as one of the conditions, in this particular case it's condition number 9, some stacking lanes or left-hand turn lane. When the developer started thinking more about what was asked, because this was not part of the original conditions that came before the Planning Commission, he met with Ed Evans and myself concerning this and asked that in most cases a traffic study would have been required, except for in this case there wasn't enough traffic on Powder House Road to require that. So to comply more with our traffic management ordinance, they are willing to do a traffic study of this development. And if the traffic study says that a stacking lane or left turn lane is needed, then they will certainly go ahead and do that and comply with a developer's agreement as to how to pay for that. However, if a traffic study is completed and the traffic engineer says it's not needed, which would have to be verified by our traffic engineer, so it's not just not that we would not trust what their traffic engineer would say, but there's that checks and balances here. Roger Dyer would verify that information, and if they both agree that according to South Carolina standards, a stacking lane is not needed, then they would not be required to put one here. He gave us a letter here with several different reasons why they felt the turn lane is not needed, and probably the most important of those is that there are going to be two entrances to this development, where we've had some in the past very similar to this, requiring a turn lane that only had one entrance into the development. So that's one of the areas that they are asking for some relief on, is for City Council to consider changing the language with the language that they are proposing. What you have before you tonight is the language that was developed and given to you at the last meeting. So if council would like to go ahead and make this change, then you would have to do so by making the changes in the last paragraph that they are suggesting, which says that there be a stacking lane on Powder House Road if determined necessary by the South Carolina Department of Transportation and if required to be built to their specification. If stacking lane is required by the South Carolina Department of Transportation, the Powder House development in the city of Aiken shall enter into a developer's agreement for the payment of the stacking lanes. So that's the one area that they're asking for some relief on.
But it would have to be found necessary.
Right.
And that we want to change that? I mean, that's what they're asking to change?
That's what they're asking. Right now, if you pass the way it is written, they are required to put the left turn lane in. If you make the change to what they're asking, a traffic study would be done first, and if required, then they would put it in. If it's not required, then they wouldn't put it in.
I think it's good to get that traffic study myself.
It says, though, that it has to be determined to be necessary. I don't understand. I mean, first, and I have another question while we're at it. Is this going to be an age-limited project?
The developer, my understanding it is, but I'd rather have the developer say that for the record. And to answer that first question, you had 9C as it's currently written. It just says that stacking lanes would be required, where they're saying what they'd like to, if it's required by the traffic study, then they would be built. So, but I'll let. This is Todd Bailey.
Yeah, Todd Bailey, 3551 Bellevue Circle. When we came here a couple weeks ago, the last meeting, the interpretation coming from the planning and zoning was if a stacking was required, then we would do it, and that wasn't a problem. And then we came in here and we had the debate about whether that it wasn't interpreted that way, that it was interpreted, no, it's going to have to be required. And that's when we sat back and we looked at it to determine if that was going to be necessary. This is going to be an age-restricted community. We're targeting active adults, you know, 55 and older.
Oh, I thought when we approved it the first time, we were looking for affordable housing for all ages of the Aiken community. So this is a completely different project.
Are you talking 6 months ago?
When it was voted the first time to provide water and sewer, correct.
In September. That was a combination of townhomes, duplexes, and some single-family homes. Mm-hmm. So that was a situation where you're going to have all ages of people running from 20 to whatever, which is going to be a lot higher volume of people, of traffic. The intent with the active adult community is the traffic patterns are going to be a lot different. A lot of people don't have necessarily two cars, or people are out of town for a couple weeks at a time. They tend to want to avoid traffic, so they're not running the peak times. A lot of, you know, you're not going to have, you know, 200 homes all of a sudden between 4:30 and 6:30 at night having people coming home. So it's a different community than a typical, you know, non-active adult community.
Todd, just a question here. Unfortunately, it happens so much in our society today that older mothers and fathers sometimes have to take care of their children's children.
Sure.
Now, what would be the case if that happened here? Suppose someone like that wanted to come in and buy a place, or after the fact they were already there, they had to take care of kids. That's an exception, I assume?
That's an exception, but that's not going to be... You're not going to have 200 instances of
grandparents. Oh, no. You won't have many, hopefully.
No, I mean, you're going to have...
Maybe none.
You potentially have a handful. Are you talking about that from a restriction or from a traffic...
Well, if you say, you know, it's limited to 55 and older.
Correct.
So if you start there...
That'll be in the covenants.
It
just leads me to ask the question.
So then it's very hard to make an exception, usually when the grandchild comes, but that's not the...
Well, I mean, I you know, just have to look at that. The issue is, you know, a 35-year-old is not going to be able to come in and buy the home. It's going to have to be purchased by the grandparent.
Right.
You know, if the grandparent does have a child, a young child, a grandchild living with them, or a teenager living with them, I mean, it is an active adult. It's not going to restrict. It's not going to be different than, you know, in the summertime if the grandparents have the grandkids come down for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. So.
I don't accept. I mean, we can see what we do about this stacking lane. I did sit out there for a day for a while this afternoon. It's a very narrow street along there, and that concerns me a lot. I don't buy it that they're only going to have one vehicle. I find retirees always have two vehicles. I don't see the wife sitting at home any longer, nor the husband. I find that very funny, since I'm at the age that would be eligible for this, and we seem to have more vehicles than we've ever owned in our entire lifetime somehow. Does that need to be part of the, I mean, I just think a left turn lane would be so. Such an amenity for your project. You know what? In other words, just a wonderful, a really nice amenity for the people that buy your properties to be able to turn there and not have to worry about people piling up behind them and urging them on to turn.
Okay, I understand.
I have a technical question. Is this within a quarter of a mile of Powder House, of Pine Log Road? Is Pine Log Road going to be included in any traffic study? Or can we require it?
I'm not sure about the quarter of a mile.
It's real close.
If it is under the traffic study requirement, the entire area within a quarter of a mile has to be considered. We already know that East Pine Log Road is really right at its capacity, and I really have a hard time agreeing with your logic that the bulk of this traffic is going to go down Powder House to get to Whiskey and shop at the other end. I think you'll find people moving to Aiken really come here. The downtown has great appeal. The Kroger's area has great appeal. I think you'll find about a 50-50 split. So you're going to be adding, I think, a considerable amount of traffic to East Pine Log Road.
Well, now, Todd, you've agreed to pay for a traffic study.
Correct.
Right? And so then the left turn lane would depend on the outcome, really, of that traffic study.
The traffic study.
I mean, if it indicates you need one, fine.
That's right.
If it doesn't, then...
But the numbers may also impel us a different way if we include the full quarter of... full diameter of what from that entrance to East Pine Log, and I do think it's less than a quarter of a mile.
I do too, and I think we ought to have a traffic study.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you've agreed to that, because that was one of the things I wanted to bring up as well. And it's so close that I think in this case, and with the traffic situation, but is council willing to let that be the guiding light, so to speak, on whether or not a turn lane is put in?
Well, I really went along with this last time without the traffic study, because the left turn lane was to be a part of it, and there was to be a developer agreement for it. But now we're changing the ball game, and I don't think I could go along with that particularly. I'd like to see the traffic study, and then we'll make a decision which way it goes.
I mean, Dick, are you saying that?
I'd say...
You go along with what...
Well, would you go with the traffic...
No, I'm saying we don't approve this on second reading. I'd like to see the traffic study first.
But what are you saying from the results of the traffic study? If the traffic study indicates that it does not need a left-hand turn lane, you're going to be willing to accept that? Because that's what we're saying here.
But you're also could possibly be adding more traffic, and I think you will be, frankly, as it comes down to it, you'll be adding more traffic to a road that we already know is right at its capacity. You see? So there are other traffic implications.
But you were talking about Pine Log Road being at its capacity.
Right.
And I understand that.
And add more to that.
But the issue on this isn't the Pine Log Road. It's the left-hand turn coming down Powderhouse into the development. So it's...
No. I was prepared to accept the idea that you're going to do a left-turn lane, because we know intuitively that's going to be needed sooner or later. We know that. And that road is going to have to be widened, and there are going to have to be expenditures on Powderhouse. But what I'm saying is, if you get out to that traffic study, you're also going to make us even more aware of the fact that we're adding traffic onto East Pine Log that it may not be able to take. So there may have to be other accommodations there that you, with your transportation enhancement fee, might be used for that purpose rather than the left turn lane. So I'm not prepared to say let's give up the left turn lane right now. If you want to do a traffic study, let's do it, and then we'll figure out what happens next.
I just think also that road needs a turn lane where you're going to turn into your place. I really think it needs it. If it doesn't need it today, as Dick and Jane have mentioned, it's going to need it. We all know it's going to need it soon, because there's going to be more traffic. We've seen that history already, you know. So I think we ought to have the traffic lane, or the turn lane, in there. I agree with you, Dick, on that. Jane, you said the same thing.
What's the estimated cost? Do you have an estimated cost of?
That's about $200,000.
$200,000.
Yeah.
I think more and more we've got to start looking at these kinds of things. I think we all realize that probably, and think ahead. We're not going. All of a sudden, people are not going to stop coming to Aiken. It's going to continue. And while you may not need it today, or even by the time you build out, I bet you will need it by the time you build out, if not today. Now, the question is, of course, is that traffic management ordinance does not say that it has to be done with this number, this assumed number of traffic.
But he's volunteered to do it, in the hope of avoiding doing the left turn lane.
I know, that's right. Now, so the little bit of a dilemma I have, I guess, is going along with the traffic study, including Pine Log Road, and see what the outcome is. And in that case, though, if it says you do it, you do it. If it says no, you don't need it, you don't do it.
That's exactly what I'm proposing.
In 2 or 3 years, things are going to change.
We still have to do it.
Yeah, who does it in 2 or 3 years when it has to be done? And if anybody thinks it's not going to have to be done in 2 or 3 years, I'd like to see their hand up in the air. It's going to have to be done. 2 or 3 years? 4 years? Todd, you probably know that too.
And there's a chance of it. There's also, as Ed talked, the South Carolina Department of Transportation is looking at adding a left-hand, or adding, widening that road.
Well, I don't know what authority we have, though, to get them to do that. We're trying to get traffic lights and all kinds of things at intersections that we all agree that need them, and we'd be turned down 2 or 3 times on some of them.
No, I don't want to do a traffic study as an effort to just spend the money and do a traffic study. The whole point was, for the change in the recommendation when I met with Mr. LaDuc, was if we did the traffic study and the traffic study came back that there was not the need for a turn lane there and y'all's engineer agreed with that, and then we would change the ordinance or the amendment the way it is.
Yeah.
But to go ahead and do a traffic study and come back and then re-vote on it and say, well, we still don't like the way the traffic study, that's basically you're saying right now that you want the left-hand turn lane.
Well, the traffic study is a nice thing, but it's a point-in-time kind of thing. It's not really looking out, I don't think, unless I've mixed something. It's not looking out 3, 4, or 5 years.
Well, actually, I think Mark was just saying
the traffic study would go ahead and project based on historical values. On, in other words, if they see in our area a 3% growth rate in traffic, they would go ahead and look 5 years from now at 3% growth rate on Powder House, plus what the development would have it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, is that accurate? Is it not? Is it going to be growing at that same average, or is Powder House World going to be growing at a exponentially increased traffic?
Yeah.
So traffic engineering is not an exact science.
Well, if Powder House Road doesn't get widened, and I hear no talk of it being widened, has anybody else heard any?
None.
Maybe adding a couple of foot or so. Just imagine what it's going to be in 3 to 4 years. With all the additional traffic that's going to be on Powder House.
Well, I was prepared and indeed moved that we go ahead and approve it because I think you've created a good project. I was against it to begin with, as you probably know, when it was going to be in the county. And I would be against letting you go ahead and have this on a, maybe we'll do the turn lane. We know intuitively that it's going to have to be done at some point in the process. You can save yourself the money, not do the traffic study. Go ahead with the enhancement. Otherwise, I personally could not support the application on second reading.
Any other comments?
Do you understand what we're saying?
Yeah, I do, but from my standpoint, I look like I'm getting penalized here from the standpoint that 5-6 months ago, a project with not nearly as, I would think, as popular with y'all was approved and was the same density. The reason I'm having to come back was for the annexation of the additional 15 acres to which I'm actually reducing density. And at that point in time, that original agreement, there is no left-hand turn lane. So to go back and do a bunch of duplexes and townhouses, you don't have to have a left-hand turn lane, but to do this project, which has got a different demographic of people living in it, on the same piece of property with less density, mm-hmm. I'm having to do a left-hand turn lane. And like I said, if a traffic study said it needs to be done, I got no problem with that. If a traffic study says it doesn't have to be done, then I don't think I should have to do one. And that's what we asked for here, was to let the traffic study determine whether it has to be done or not. Not to just say, well, in 5 or 6 years we know it's going to have to be done. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you're going to need it in a year. I was sat there today and watched it. There's no room on that road for anybody to go around. Nothing. And of course, I didn't vote for the one 6 months ago either. In fact, I couldn't believe we gave water and sewer to a project that wasn't even going to be in the city. But now that you're doing it, it looks a lot better. But it's still over 200 homes. That's a lot of traffic, and that's a lot of people going in and out, and they aren't going to stay in their homes all day. They're not. And I mean, especially if they're retired, they got more time than we ever thought about.
Well, no, there's no question. They're not going to sit around and watch soap operas all day. But
I just think it would be a better project if it had. And we've learned in the last 6 months. We've looked at places where we've got problems. We've got to start at some point. You know, are we always going to say, well, we never had this before. We never had that before, so we'll never have it forever? I don't think so,
Well, I understand that. But there's also a second turn lane here, which takes the whole back of the – there's a second entrance to the property, which takes the whole back half of the property. And makes it much easier for them to come to the second entrance. So you're not going to have you're not going to have the entire community going through one road. There are two entrances to the property. And that's what makes this a little bit. I mean, I think the combination of two entrances, it is going geared towards aqueducts. Some of the other patterns that a traffic study is a better way than just saying, well, we have to have it. I mean, if that's what we're saying, then that's what we're saying. I don't want to do a traffic study and it be overridden.
Yeah. Are you building all these homes?
Yes.
So it's not going to be where the land sold to other builders?
No.
Well, Todd, it's very clear that this is so much better this go-around than it was in September.
Well, I agree.
Where you were after 462 units, I guess, compared to 225, and those units were not age limited. These are. You did have two entrances at the other one, though, didn't you?
It was two.
But you had twice as many or more homes in there too. So you've done a good job in trying to.
No, it was not twice as many homes. It was approved for 200 units. We're approved for the same number of units. It's just on less acreage, and it's a different.
Okay. What I was looking at is what you could have had, though.
Right. Yeah, we did not go for the maximum density. We are way. That's what I mean. I'm trying to be a good citizen, whatever you want to take that as a developer, and not just slam in a bunch of homes. I mean, most people want townhomes and duplexes and all that, and I came in and said, wait a minute, I'm going to back off. I want to do individual homes and gear towards. Active adult, because that is the baby boomers is a very hot product right now. But, so we're trying to be very conscientious about it. If a left-hand turn lane is needed, I have no problem putting it in. I just don't want to say absolutely 100% it's needed.
Right.
I really think it is, and I'd rather see, frankly, I don't think the citizens of the city of Aiken should have to pay for it. I think the people are going to... I think the developer should pay for it. Maybe working with us, but I don't think it should be the responsibility of the existing City of Aiken taxpayers to pay for that.
They either need to pay us the money up front or build it before they get permits.
Well, I understand your concern.
They may not really be needed. But probably 5-10 years from now.
Right.
So what's the difference? I guess I don't understand the difference here. That's true.
We don't have a traffic study that says.
Mr. Mayor.
He's saying if a traffic study is done, that the traffic study may say you don't need it.
Not even fine.
The traffic study is looking towards the future.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
It appears that what Todd is indicating is that he would be willing to do a traffic study. And if that traffic study reflects that the turns are needed, then he would comply with the traffic study. If the traffic study does not say that this is warranted, even though we think that it may be needed 5 years from now. My question to our attorney is, are we legally, should we legally tell him that he needs to put in these terms, even though currently the traffic study says one thing at this point in time?
You have the right, as counsel, to approve or not approve this project because he's asking to annex into the city.
Okay.
And council is not obligated to agree to annex any property into the city of Aiken. You don't want to. And so if council has any reason why they don't want to annex this property, that's a valid reason for turning down the annexation if that's what council wants to do. Okay. So if he won't agree to do a left turn lane, council can use that as a valid reason for turning down the annexation.
Okay.
The other part of the question, though, you've got an ordinance that says how you want to do traffic management in the city of Aiken, and it tells you, it tells you all of the guidelines that the council is supposed to follow or that your developers are supposed to follow for purposes of determining whether certain roadway improvements are necessary or not. He's not obligated to do the traffic study, from what I understand from Mr. Evans, but he has volunteered to do one, and he's volunteered to do one in accordance with our ordinance that we've approved, and he's volunteered that if improvements are necessary pursuant to that traffic study, then he will comply with that traffic study. He has offered, if the traffic study comes back and says the left turn lane is not necessary at this time to mitigate traffic, that's what our ordinance says.
It doesn't say necessarily at this time. It doesn't right now. It says it build up.
Right. Whatever Roger Dyer.
It is the 5 years.
After Roger Dyer looks at the traffic study, he's going to be making his own assessment as to whether it fully complies with our traffic ordinance that y'all put a lot of work into. Mm-hmm. If we need to amend that ordinance to take it deeper into the development or something like that, maybe council needs to consider that. But if the traffic study comes back that's approved by our traffic engineer that says, based on what we're seeing for whatever period of time is needed for build out, that the left turn lane is not needed, that's the ordinance that we have now, and he would be in compliance with that ordinance. I'm not sure if that's helpful or not.
What is the build out period again?
Realistically, 5.5 to 7 years.
Okay.
My only concern, Ms. Fodder's question about the taxes. If this property is annexed into the city of Aiken in 5 years of build out, you're going to be getting an additional $400,000+ a year in tax revenue that you wouldn't be getting. And this property is not going to be a tax burden. Like a lot of new younger developments, there's not going to be additional schools required for it, a lot of things. We're actually maintaining the roads private. So from that standpoint, this is not going to be a major tax burden if in 7 years down the road or whatever it came out that you decided a left-hand turn lane was going to be there. In 5 years, we'll pump $2 million of taxes in the city of Aiken.
How much are these properties going to sell for?
They're going to start in the low 200s.
I just can't help but tell you that I think for the density of this project that you'd be so smart to build that left turn lane. I really do. At the very beginning, I think we slow people down to look at it. I just think it's a mistake not to do it. And by the way, if it's going to be a retirement community, shouldn't we have that somewhere? If that makes a difference. It says nothing about it in the ordinance. It's just in his letter.
It's in the narrative.
In under PR, you have to have a narrative, and in the narrative it does talk about it.
That's the law then, the narrative?
Mm-hmm. know, that has to be part of your PR.
Council really isn't passing on whether this can be a retirement community or not be a retirement community. Mm-hmm. That's really a decision
that the developer makes. Yeah, I mean, we can't hold them to that one way or the other.
That's correct. That's correct.
The only thing we can hold them to is the fact of the layout of the development and the type of the development and the number of units in the development. One of the things that, by the way, that I have not seen, and I was going to bring this up at the appropriate time, was that in item number 7, that the elevations, the proposed buildings, including depiction of the buildings, materials, and colors to be used, would be submitted to council for approval. And we haven't seen that yet.
What was passed from our last meeting?
Sure.
Elevation.
Okay, so that is your submittal. We will need something on record because we don't have anything.
Okay.
So if we could have that, so that would be your submittal then for item number 6. Fine.
Okay.
And if you could leave that with us tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, now that's a real project, or that's just a picture you got from somewhere? I mean, is that what it's really going to look like?
They will have to follow that.
The draftsman drew up for me. This is what you all saw last week.
Mm-hmm. If they don't build it according to those standards, then we would be able to stop them from continuing the development. Again, to kind of echo a little bit onto what Gary was saying, he was taking it from a standpoint of the traffic management ordinance, but also in addition to the annexation as to what you could require or not require under PR, again, council has the leeway of looking at what you see within this development and asking for anything that you want to. Just as the developers come to you tonight and asking some things under the PR, you could in reverse ask of him of the PR. And one thing that he did mention is the fact that 6 months ago, I believe it was on a 5-2 vote, it was approved to build approximately 200 units in this area with no left-hand turn. So we're now at 225 with a much larger area. Again, I see it in one way where the traffic management ordinance says you require them to do certain things based on good traffic engineering, and either we need to follow those kind of examples or we don't follow those examples, or we need to change the ordinance, as Mr. Smith said, as to what we will require or not require within the traffic management ordinance and traffic studies in the future.
Roger, and this is just a question being thrown out there. Could we potentially charge a $500 per unit as a highway enhancement fee, enter into a developer's agreement?
That is exactly what we had planned to do.
That's what I thought we were.
That's in here, that we will do that if it was determined.
When Todd sat down with us the first time, it was, here's the developer's agreement, here's approximately how much each unit would cost per unit, here's how you'd pay for it, and we were prepared to go ahead and present that to you at the next meeting, depending on which way you went tonight.
Well, the reason I was asking, and the figures that I was asking, is apparently we're looking at approximately $200,000 for the turn lane.
$180,000
to $200,000, yeah. And here again, we've got a sneaking idea that it's not needed today, but it could possibly be needed 5 or 6 years in the future, which would give us time off of the tax base of this property to realize some monies to be able to do some things with. But if we were to charge $500 per unit or set this up with him instead of $1,000 per unit, then that money could go into a fund which later could be used to add those turn lanes if indeed they were necessary in 6 years, or it could go to the potentially widening of Pine Log Road if we needed to apply those funds in that area. Or the bypass of the Powderhouse Whiskey Connector Road. Those things that would enhance the availability of this property, as well as ease the traffic patterns that we're seeing now, would not immediately have you picking up $200,000 or $180,000 as each property is sold. then $500 from that property would come into this fund, which then the City of Aiken could use at a later date to either provide those turn lanes, if indeed they are needed 6 years down the road, or possibly widen Powderhouse Road with that, with the funds that was received. So that's pretty much splitting that with you, instead of requiring you to do that out of the starting gate, or requiring you to do a traffic study. Would that be something that you would agree
to? I would be willing to look at that, yeah.
But that would only generate $100,000.
But it's not going to have to be done tomorrow, Jane. You know, so in 5 years, this property has generated some income to the City of Aiken, but it's also put some money into a fund that's generating interest that could be used for this traffic. I was just trying to hit it upon a compromise that we could, you know, that would satisfy.
I guess I didn't ask the question.
You stated the question better than I did when I was talking to Roger about it.
Okay.
I was saying, why can't we do something similar to what we're doing at Woodside?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's exactly, I mean, we'd be doing that at Woodside, and
right.
we should be doing that on every development.
Well, we're going to have to do that.
Of substance in the future.
On these developments. I'm not in favor of the development funding the entire project, but it's going to have to carry some of its own weight.
And we had proposed that to Todd and told him that the fee was going to be approximately $900 per unit, and that's when he said, is there any other alternatives? And that's when he came up with this suggestion. Council could go ahead and, in a developer's agreement, have 500, could have 1,000, could have 1,500. That's a number that would have to be determined between you and the developer as to all we were trying to do is to recover the full amount of what those left-hand turn lanes were going to be. Another way of looking at it that you would have to take into account would be if it's 100, let's say it's $200,000 today, and you look at the inflationary factor, and it's going to be built in 7 years, that $200,000 would probably be more closer to $280,000 to $300,000 to actually build it. So that's it's today's dollars versus tomorrow's dollars. And so what amount do you charge to recover it? And again, you'd want to have a reasonable amount factored based on the need and cost of development and how much can a development bear, so to speak. Or you could look at it and say the city could be funding part of that in the future. Some of the unknowns that we have in this development, if you looked at the actual plans that were approved by the Powderhouse Connector Committee, and you look where the connector is supposed to terminate on Powderhouse Road, one of the locations is exactly at the entrance of this development. It's almost uncanny how the two line up with one another. So there easily could be a traffic light at this location connecting where the connector is at. And that's the committee I know Dick and several of you others sat on. The other thing is the Highway Department has indicated that they're looking at widening this road for a left-hand turn lane. But believe me, folks, I would not go based on their indications because they have told us promises and other indications in the past. And although we had in the developer's agreement that if the Highway Department does build a left-hand turn lane, then these fees would cease at that point in time. But again, we have no guarantees from the Highway Department. But that was going to be part of that developer's agreement, case that they did build it. But until they build it or something actually happens, it's just an unknown.
But $500 wouldn't be enough to...
$500 comes out to $112,500, which today's dollars would be... Of course, it doesn't pay for it all, but I think what Councilmember Wells was saying was it would be a compromise between the high end and the low end.
I just don't think that... You know, I mean, there's all sorts of factors that you can take into consideration in this. Is this company already doing a project here in Aiken in close proximity to this project? How many projects do we have them working on at one time? All this has to be taken into consideration as to the cost of this project. What I am saying is that, the projects that we see of this magnitude in the future is going to have to pull some of the weight to improve our roadways, so that they can handle the traffic that they're generating. I'm not saying that they have to carry all the weight. And, sir, if I wasn't going to travel on that road, I'd say that your project may need to carry all that weight. But there's roads that I drive on there every day, and I should be responsible for some of my actions as far as traveling on your roadways there. But I think this is a good step. It's a good compromise in heading in the direction that we need to head in as far as having a developer's agreement so that it's not costing you immediately out of your pocket, so that as you sell these properties, $500 from each one of those properties would go into this fund, which then would draw interest at a certain rate. And it could be 5 years, it could be 6 years. But at 6 years, when your property is built out, then we've also receiving additional revenue from these properties that could aid in adding those turn lanes if they need to be added at that time. It's just, to me, a good compromise between us and you. We're not requiring you to put the money up front and put those turn lanes in immediately. We're not requiring this traffic study because all of us know that sooner or later those turn lanes are going to be needed. When, we're not sure. But it would help us in putting those turn lanes in, or possibly widening Powder House Road, or possibly correcting that intersection that we need to correct when indeed that connector road comes in. But we've got funds that are sitting aside that's designated for those enhancements for that roadway.
Well, and if the Department of Transportation came in there, the money you'd already collected would be...
The money we'd be collected would be used for enhancements in that area. It may not be for the turn lane, but it may be...
You'd already have.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But let me also put it, let's say that the Department of Transportation doesn't come. Let's say you're paying on what I would call the as-you-go plan.
Sure.
If that's needed 2 or 3 years from now, long before you've finished your project, we're going to be the ones that are going to be enhancing that road to take care of your problem.
Well...
Yeah, but you'd be dealing with that money.
You know, some of the money, but it's going to be helping you as well as other people who use that road.
The developer's agreement that was written by...
Larry Morris.
The only issue I had with it was whether a left-hand turn lane was an absolute requirement or not. I mean, I think the terms of it, when I met with Mr. LeDuc, was fine. It was very fair for me. I think it was fair for y'all. If some... 4 years down the road, someone came along and was going to do the road for you, I might get my money back. You've got it for putting up the good faith up front in me. I had no problems with that. That's true.
No. Well, but $500
isn't enough. I've got no problem with his recommendation either.
Well, I guess I have a question about why $500. I'm not convinced that's the right price yet.
I was thinking more $900.
Roger had mentioned $900. Was it put into the developer's agreement or thought?
We had not put the exact number into that agreement. 100%. Again, we'd gone over that agreement. In principle, Todd had agreed to it, but until we had this meeting tonight, I wasn't prepared to bring that to the table for City Council because there were some other leftover questions concerning this.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to add that to ask you to do a traffic study is taking you through hoops that I know that we're going to want a turn lane there, period. A lane is going to be needed. The developer's agreement where you're going to be asked to acquire a certain amount from the folks that plan to move there, $900, I think, would be what I would recommend based on what Roger has said rather than $500, would be an amount that we could put into an agreement. And if that road is done by the highway department, then NAFTA, was stated by Dick, we would use that for enhancement for some other use with those funds.
And that's, I guess, the concern I've got after meeting with Mr. LeDuc was if I'm paying the whole bill, which at $900 I would be floating the whole bill, and 4 years down the road or 3 years down the road somebody else came in, I put out a whole lot of money that I've got nothing for that's just going into traffic enhancement. I mean, what Mr. Wells was talking about was kind of a break-even and not doing a traffic study, because traffic study may not indicate today that a left-hand turn lane is necessary, and 6, 7, 8 years from now it may be necessary, but today it may not.
But the lane's going to go into your project.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to go into three other projects. It's going to go right into your project, the left-hand turn lane.
Right.
Todd, let's take a break a minute and let Mr. Joby talk. Mr. Ed Joby, I know he's been waiting to say something, and it might clear this whole thing up, what he's about to say.
Well, first of all, I think what the developers presented to you in terms of the lower traffic impact because of the nature of the development of a so-called adult community 55 years and older, and presumably the traffic study would be based also on that, so that lesser requirements might be necessary for a so-called senior community. My question is, what assurance does the city have that a year or 2 years or 3 years as his build-out continues, that this will continue to be a so-called senior community? Mm-hmm. What if a year or 2 or 3 years down the road, economic conditions change, he changes his mind, and you have a very mixed community with children and whatever, whatever? That changes the entire nature and complex of this discussion. So is it going to be deed restricted to 55 or older? What assurance do you have that at some point
he can answer that.
This project won't change?
Thank you, Ed.
That's a good question.
But I don't even want to concede that point, however, Ed, because there are, we live on Woodside. Woodside is pretty close to a retirement community. They have some other, we have a lot of families there as well, but the numbers don't quite measure up to the traffic manual says 10 trips per residence. That's what we all go on. Woodside runs, and we've got real traffic counts, about 8 trips per residence. So that's slightly modified because they are retirees. A lot of them golf, and they, most of their outlets for pleasure, etc., are right on the unit. You're not really going to have the same thing. You're going to have the people who move here, they want to go downtown, they want to go to Kroger's, they're going to want to do all of those things. So I don't see the counts being that much lower, frankly. We disagree for a change.
To answer the deed restriction, that will be deed restricted or active adult. You know, this whole scenario that we're going through right now is because I stepped up and said I don't want to do a bunch of townhomes and duplexes and single family. I want to make a nicer community. I want to put a better product out there for Aiken, which I think one will sell better, but long term for the community is going to be a better product. If I wanted to turn around and run through these hoops that we're doing now and in 2 years change it, I mean, I'd be a whole lot ahead to just change the whole plan right now and go back to the duplexes, and we can end everything. That's not what my intention is. My intention is to put a nice product on the ground. I don't want to have any problems with traffic issues, but I honestly believe with the 8 items that I've outlined, there's some serious validity to them, as I discussed with Mr. LeDuc in his office, and having 2 entrances and the active adult is going to be different. You know, you don't have your peak times of turning in there, a left-hander going home, which would be at night coming off of work. You know, if the majority of the neighborhood is not working, your 4:30 to 6:30 peak hour is not going to be heavily trafficked at that point in time. And you've got another entrance, and you've got another main intersecting road. I think there are circumstances to do to make this not, and this isn't just me up here saying I don't want to spend $108,000. I've stated if we said a traffic study was necessary, and if we agreed to the traffic study, if we agreed a traffic study was necessary, and it came back and said it has to be done, I've got no problem with that. But if it said that we didn't have to do it based on the 5-year projections that they do, then I wanted to go with that. But I don't. This isn't just a developer up here worrying about $180,000. The developer's agreement that was laid out in front of me was was fair from the standpoint. My question was whether it needs to be done or not up front, and that's where I'm at.
But you're not really doing it up front. It's a fee that's being laid on each, as each dwelling is built.
Well, no, but I mean, I see how you're saying that, but it's still you're paying for it. I mean, if I buy my car for 5 years, every month I'm still making that payment on it, and it's the same situation. So I am paying it, and if in 3 years down the road, all of a sudden somebody comes through and widens the road, you know, the money, let's just say I sold 100 houses, I put $100,000 into a fund that somebody else is paying for something going on that I just completely have lost. And that's where, I mean, I guess rolling the dice on, do you have a traffic study, and if the traffic study comes back, you need to do the left-hand turn lane? Yeah, you do. If the traffic study comes back, you don't. That's what the whole point of this was. It wasn't that the idea of the developer's agreement. I mean, I have no problem with the developer's agreement. I thought that was fine. It was a very fair way to do it. My question was, based on the items I indicated in the memo, there are extenuating circumstances. There's just not. Yeah, there's a ton of traffic, and it's got to go. That's what my point.
Let me ask a couple questions. Make sure I understand. You've got a build-out period on a traffic study.
I have not conducted.
There is a build-out period when a traffic study is done. Okay.
Right.
Okay. We've learned that, or we've come back to understanding that. So that will tell us what need to do at the end of 7 years anyway. 5 to 7 years, you say, the build-out period. All right. In the meantime, we'll be getting, based on the builder's agreement, the assessment.
Correct.
All right? Whatever that figure may come out to be that we agree to. And it will be deeded, the fact that the age limit will be in the deed. Okay. And I think it consistency, obviously, and I think we all agree to this, is very important that we're as consistent as we can be when we're dealing with different people. And on the traffic ordinance, certainly it needs to be changed. It's on the Planning Commission agenda, you know. So we know that needs to be changed, but it is what it is. However, we do have the right, since we're annexing, to make this requirement. You've agreed to it, to do the traffic study. Right?
Yeah, the traffic study has not been part of anything that we've discussed. That was just
so. Let's say we do the traffic study. It says you don't have to do it right now. We're still getting the assessment. Is that correct? Because of the builder's agreement.
No.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure.
If that was the case, we would just
it's either or. See.
Right.
You do the assessment or the study.
Yeah. And of course, while these houses are being built, there are going to be trucks going in there. I mean, it's going to be a real load on that road.
The construction traffic is going to be using the second entrance.
So they'll come in from behind?
Old Powder House.
Mm-hmm. From where?
Old Powder House Road. Mm-hmm. Go right past the little portion right there.
Excuse me, I have a question for Mr. Evans. We're talking the quarter mile in a traffic study. I have the idea that somewhere in there's some language that we could actually expand that if in the consideration of the planning director that it was necessary. Is that true?
I don't have the ordinance with me. I think that is in there.
You think it's in there. I think it is. And I would say that we would have to go, if we were going to do a traffic study, we'd have to go beyond a quarter of a mile to make sure that the pine log traffic and your incremental addition to it are all taken into consideration. And I still, and having said that, then of course, that traffic study could actually indicate that you need to do even more than what we're asking you to do over a 5-year period. It could. We got things happening in this town. Traffic is building up, and what you're creating is an incremental part of it. And so it can't be, to me, it can't be all or nothing based on study that's kind of taking a micro view of traffic on a less traveled road.
Powerhouse connectors will be built.
That's my argument.
Just for the record, I'm going to make a motion. I'm going to make a motion.
That's something that needs development.
So are you not willing to do this if you don't want to be annexed if you do, you have to build a left turn lane? Is that what you're telling us?
No.
Okay. I just honestly think it would do you the most good of anything rather than a fund that's going to be spent and you don't know where. You know, this way you got something that's right for your development. And you know it's going to be spent on that because you're going to do it. And I think that would make more sense.
Mr. Mayor, I want to make a motion.
Well, no, wait a minute. We're still in public hearing. Just a minute.
Ms. Bryce, please.
Okay.
There may be some more comments here we want to make. You know, Roger and I were just chatting here a moment, and when that powderhouse connector is put in, and hopefully it will be put in sometime in our lifetime, you're not only going to have traffic coming down powderhouse from points south, you're going to have them coming from Eastgate too. And there's a likelihood that traffic is going to even be more than it is now. But that's, you know, that's a few years in advance out there. But I tend to think that the best way here to get the money that we need is to have that assessment that y'all have talked about that's in the developer's agreement, and just make it high enough that we cover at least most of our cost, if not all of it. If it's $900 or whatever it is, and then we don't have to have the traffic study, which would make us consistent with our traffic ordinance as it reads now, and then we'd be getting the money and more money than just $500 to be able to do this work, to put in that left turn lane. Todd, you said you were reasonably pleased with the developer's agreement.
No, the language of it was fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it had been settled exactly on the cost or the assessment per unit.
But
Roger mentioned early on the $900, so obviously y'all have talked about that.
Yes.
And we'd have to approve that anyway in council. So why wouldn't that be a way to get an amount of money that would at least be much higher than the $500 per unit, and approach the cost of the actual cost of the turn lane? If the highway department comes in and does it, then fine. But if they don't, then we'd at least have a much higher proportion of the money that we need, to put it in.
What, could I get reimbursed part of the money that I put into the fund if the highway department comes in and pays for it?
Well, that I think y'all have discussed that. I think we've even talked about it. It's been discussed here that money would be used for other areas where we need to.
It just goes into a general fund.
Yeah. Well, it would be put in the road fund, so to speak.
Right. Transportation enhancement fund.
And chances are they'll, you know, Roger talked about possibly a light at that intersection where it comes in, where the road will come in from the Powderhouse, Whiskey Road to Powderhouse connection.
But it would have to be used in that general area,
yeah.
Is that correct?
Right.
Well, the way it's set up right now is it goes into a transportation enhancement fund to be used for transportation projects, just as you said, even though where you live might be associated with a project, you're going to be driving this area as well as other areas. So it's just going to go into a pot of money that will be used for other projects throughout the city as necessary.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be used within that certain area.
That is correct. Just like if you approve the Woodside agreement later on, they know, we know, that those left-hand turn lanes at Whiskey and Chime Bell Church Road and Anderson Pond Road and Silver Bluff may or may not ever go in. You know, we just don't know. It's hard to project. As in this development here, we may see traffic increase to such a point on Powderhouse Road that build-out takes 7 years, but we may need it in 3 years, or maybe 5 years, or we may find out it's never needed. You know, it's not an exact science. We're basing it all on future historical, how much traffic is going to increase over a period of time, what's the opposing traffic going northbound on Powderhouse Road. If all of a sudden the connector comes in, let's say a quarter of a mile south of here, then the amount of traffic coming off that connector is going to probably make from that point to Pine Log Road along Powderhouse, it'll probably double in traffic. Might even triple the amount of traffic that gets along there. And if that's the case, that's that many more cars that are opposing the left-hand turn movement into this development, which would accelerate the need for it. So there's a lot of factors. But the answer to your question is the money that would go into this fund would be used for this project, number one, if needed. But if the project was never built, then it would be used for other transportation projects that all the citizens of Aiken would be able to enjoy.
I guess, if I might add, if a consideration can be made that, you know, if I didn't come here for annexation, this property wouldn't be discussing this at all, because city services had already been rendered back in September. So I guess if we're going to do the builder's agreement, I would appreciate if we could do some consideration for the fact that I am increasing the tax base substantially and not putting a tax burden, with the exception of potential turn lane I'd be paying for anyhow, by keeping roads and services inside private. I mean, I think there needs to be some consideration. I think that's where we went from $900 to $500. Probably an hour ago, but in some consideration on that, because if the property wasn't annexed at all, then we wouldn't. I mean, you're talking over 6 years, you know, potential of $2 million.
But do you get some advantages from being annexed as well? Don't you, for your project? You think your project is just as good outside the city limits as it is if it's in the city of Aiken? You don't think that's an advantage at all, insurance-wise, or utility fees wise, or
I'll save a few hundred dollars on utility, on tax.
Well, you save that. You save.
But you got to realize I'm not going to be.
Who's going to do the public safety then? The county, the sheriff. I mean, you're going to get some amenities too.
Oh no, there are. I mean, it's a give and take, and that's what I'm trying to get at here. Is I would just like some consideration for
right.
that.
I think we understand that, Todd. Yeah. Right. Okay, I think we have another gentleman that would like to speak.
Mark Tierney, 146 Springstone Court, Aiken. While I was standing here, the council did bring up and cover many of the comments that I wanted to make sure that you brought up, so I wanted to commend you for your careful deliberation. As a new homeowner, I'm certain that I paid for all of the additional amenities that my contractor put into my allotment and my property. I did not expect a contractor to eat $900,000 worth of profits. I fully expect that all $900 would be passed on to the homeowners. If they can afford a $200,000 home, they can afford a $200,900 home with ease. I don't think the taxpayer should have to bear that burden. Also, if those additional $900 are passed on to the homeowners, in the event that the state would widen that road, what are you going to do, make a refund to each one of the homeowners for those additional dollars that were passed on to them? So those are things that I really think that the people that benefit from the turning lane are going to be the residents themselves. They should be the one who are ultimately going to bear that cost. I don't think that you're really asking to put the builder out for anything out of pocket. I believe all those costs will be passed on to the homeowners. I also travel that road very often. There are many, many construction vehicles that are going to have to get onto Powder House or Banks Mill Road to get to that back entrance. There is going to be additional construction to open up whatever the entrance is early on in the project. So they're going to be cutting into that road far sooner than just 2 to 3 years, in my opinion. And the construction traffic is going to be right at the rush hour traffic as well. So I wanted to point those comments out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, thank you. Does anyone else would like to speak on this issue? Are there any other questions of Todd?
We need backup.
Okay, then. Do we have a motion and a second? Ms. Price wanted to make a motion a little while ago, and I cut her off.
And my motion would be, Mr. Mayor, that a left turn lane be placed on Powder House to enter this development, that a developer's agreement does show an assessment of $900 per unit in the transportation enhancement fund to be used for this project.
To pay for that?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a second?
But that's to do it now, not down the road.
Right.
Let's hear that.
Yeah, I didn't understand it either.
That a left turning lane be placed on Powder House Road.
By when?
Left turn lane be funded.
Yes.
Be funded.
But not funded.
And put in place as necessary.
As necessary, right.
Right. Okay.
On Powder House Road.
Yeah. Okay.
And that a developer's agreement show an assessment of $900 per unit in the transportation enhancement fund to be used for the funding of this.
Just a question. Do we need to get our traffic engineer in on this discussion a little bit? Do we need to leave this a little bit flexible? Because we'll get this back.
I'd like to leave the price flexible at this point in time. In looking at my numbers here, $800 times 225 units is $180,900. Is $202,500. So it's probably going to be somewhere between $800 and $900. That would be brought back to you at the next meeting if that's what you would desire for the developer's agreement.
So if we approve this, it would be approved on the basis of us also agreeing to the developer's agreement at a later date. Correctly?
Correct. That is correct.
Is that okay?
Yes,
with your motion?
It is.
Okay. Did we have a second?
I would second it.
Second. Okay. Todd, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, that's the only question I had when I went down. I heard $900 being thrown around. Was if we're going to do a developer's agreement, that the cost be, figured out what the cost is going to be, and then divided equivalently amongst the 206 lots or whatever we've got, and not just throw $900 out there. I mean, it may end up being 1,000. It could end up being 800.
Right.
But
right.
To have that as a solid number that none of us can get in the next,
We don't want it to be a guess. We
right.
want at least
we don't
some,
know that today.
Some good
I mean,
thought. Right. And approval, if it's approved again, would be based on this being agreed upon.
Right. A developer's agreement would come back to the city council at the next meeting.
Right. Is that right?
Based on the framework that you saw with Mr. Morrison last time.
Right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I just want to make sure we just didn't have an arbitrary number out there.
Right, right. Yeah.
So we're passing that as a condition of approval. If we will approve this on second reading.
And that'll have to be added,
The agreement comes back.
What you're approving is that left stacking lanes would be provided by the developer.
Mm-hmm.
What you're not approving tonight is how they're going to pay for it.
Right.
But in other words, he's agreeing that he's going to pay for it. We're going to come up with a way for him to pay for it so it doesn't have to be a lump sum check, which like one developer recently gave us a check for $180,000. But tonight we're going to have the very first one as a developer's agreement with Woodside with a transportation enhancement fee, which is the recommendation we're going to be having with them.
If I may, the draft of the ordinance that's before you actually requires that there be stacking lanes on Powder House Road in accordance with the requirements of the South Carolina Department of Transportation. Right. And so you're really not even modifying this ordinance because the next paragraph says that the developer enter into a developer's agreement with the city concerning condition 9C. And we're going to bring that agreement back to you at the next meeting. So, actually, you don't even have to modify this ordinance to put into effect what Ms. Price wants to do.
Fine.
I did ask you to put that in there.
Okay, good, good. We've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show hands. Please, all in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, moving right along here. Item six, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to close an unopened right-of-way in exchange for the new road right-of-way. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to close an unopened portion of the right-of-way of South Centennial Avenue. With just what we've been talking about, the Powder House Connector, really the very first phase is going to be opening up the section opposite Eastgate Drive. It'll go approximately 3/4 mile to the east, and then we'll have a north-south connector going directly north that would tie into the unopened portion of the right-of-way at Corporate Parkway at South Centennial Avenue. By making the swap as shown in the attached diagram, we will actually go ahead and then have the right-of-way that'll connect up with the proposed new roadway. In turn, they will get the unopened portion that the city currently has to this property to an area that we really no longer want to serve. So this is a good for the developer. It's good for us because we get 100 foot of right-of-way, and we're giving up 60 foot of right-of-way. And it gets us to where we want to go sometime in the future. This exchange of property was approved on first reading at your last meeting. This is second reading public hearing of an ordinance to close an unopened portion of the right-of-way of South Centennial Avenue and to accept the new right-of-way as shown on the attached plan.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone want to speak that wants to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I approve a move that we approve this ordinance to close non-open right-of-way in exchange for new road right-of-way. I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 7, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the code regarding sidewalk sales in the downtown area. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending Chapter 36 of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, regarding right-of-way and merchandise display. Our current ordinance states that you cannot put items for sale on the sidewalk unless there is a sidewalk sale. Currently, ADDA is allowed to have 4 sidewalk sales a year. If you approve this new ordinance, it allowed the ADDA to have additional sidewalk sales. It will also allow individuals to request up to 2 events a year. In talking to the director of ADDA last week, there's a number of different things that they could do with this. By having the additional number of events, they may want to go ahead and in the particular case that came to our attention a couple of months ago that Carla Cloud did mention at the last meeting was they might hold an event in the late winter around the time that the Heart of Antique show is, Heart of Aiken, would be to have allow all antique dealers to go ahead and have a sale, which then would still not be part of a particular owner asking for one of those 2 sales. This was a compromise of what we had the last time. It's for the last year we have not brought this ordinance back to you. At the last meeting you asked us to bring this to you. I know there's some individuals that would like to speak on this tonight, but for your approval before tonight, you did have the first reading almost actually a little over a year ago on February 27, 2006. This is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend Chapter 36 of the City Code concerning sidewalk sales.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so.
Dan Dennis Fitzgerald. I own Aiken Antiques and Auction on 106 Park Avenue. It's not the ordinance that I'm concerned about with the sales that the ADDA will sponsor or the two additional ones that they'll bring. My concern is in that ordinance it also states that no other time will you be allowed to put any merchandise on a sidewalk that is for sale. The last meeting I came to and spoke my opinion about this, it was said, if it's not broken, why are we trying to fix it? I have not had any complaints about the merchandise that I put out in front of my store. If somebody has a complaint, I wish they'd come to me and tell me of that complaint because I'm not hearing that. I don't see any other merchants here that I'm aware of. I don't know why they don't show up for this, because most merchants do put some stuff out for sale. They may not put it out every day like I do, but I'm on Park Avenue and I do not get the walking traffic. So I'm relying on somebody glancing over while they're driving to see that I'm an antique store or a store, period, whatever it might be. I do not block the walkways. I do not put anything tacky out there, in my opinion. If someone feels it's tacky, they're welcome to come to me, and I'll work with people as much as I can on that. I don't sell tacky things. That's a detriment to my business if I'm trying to do that. I'm not saying everything in my store is a 100% antique, because it's not. We couldn't survive on 100% antiques. And the other thing I brought up when I brought it up there is that there, recently, it's the first time I've seen any complaints about the tables and the chairs being on the sidewalks, obstructing traffic in front of the various restaurants. If that seems to be okay with whoever is against this merchandise being put on the sidewalks, who are anonymous as far as I'm concerned. I've never seen anything in the paper about anything being put on the sidewalk other than the tables recently. I hadn't heard about them until recently. That's all I'm saying is, in fairness to not only me, but the other retailers, if it's not broken, leave it alone. If there's a problem in my store that somebody's saying I'm putting too much out or I'm blocking the roadway, I got a big wide sidewalk down there, so I don't feel like I am. And that's all I'm asking. If you're allowing somebody to drink alcohol on city-owned property, which you're allowing by letting those tables be out there, they sit out there and drink alcohol until whatever time the restaurants close. Because there's no restriction on you after a certain time at night you have to take that beer inside the store. But yet I couldn't sit in front of my store and drink a beer. And you're saying I can't put tables out there, because that's what's saying. And with the Aiken Standard man here, I'll say this. It irritates me that when they put this in the paper about this hearing being tonight, they don't mention about the fact that they don't want anything on the sidewalks. They just say something about sidewalk sales run by ADDA. In the paper, it didn't say anything about prohibiting merchandise from being sold. I think you probably have a lot more participation here with some of the merchants if it was advertised that that was going to be brought up tonight, that no longer are you going to be able to put it. Because, I've heard through the grapevine they're going to start real estate magazines, we're going to take those off the street, we're going to have these crystal clear streets that nobody's walking on. There's not a day goes by, I swear to you folks, that people don't come in my store and say, is this still Aiken Office Supply? I've been there 5 years now. They still don't realize that I'm an antique store. And also, when they come into the store, they'll say, I didn't even know you were here, but I noticed the merchandise you have out there, and so we stopped. And it's all I'm asking you for is fairness. If the tables can be there, why can't some merchandise be there? Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Anyone else would like to speak on this issue? And we'll address your points, Dennis. No one else wants to speak on this issue.
I just like to water. Eddie Obey, 541 Grace Avenue. I'm very sympathetic to Dennis's plight. I understand. I go by his store sometimes two or three times a day, and I understand his concern, the fact that he isn't in a more heavily traveled area. But I would say I could not disagree with him more on this business of in front of restaurants. There is a clear distinction between selling merchandise on the sidewalk and outdoor cafes. Every great city in the world, whether it's London, Paris, Rome, New York City, I don't care what it is, every great city in the world has outdoor cafes. It is part of a cityscape. It is not part of a cityscape for every merchandiser to have his wares out on the sidewalk. Now, I'm not suggesting that you penalize Dennis, but the argument that outdoor cafes are on a par with selling merchandise on the sidewalk, I think, is totally invalid.
Thank you. Thank you, Ann. Anyone else like to speak? Okay, if no one else wants to speak, it's back to City Council for consideration.
So even one item is going to constitute a sidewalk sale? And just like Beverly said last week, the Warnke's rolls out that one rack of clothes. They've been doing that for 25 years.
If we're going to enforce this, if you pass it the way it's written, then any items that are current that would be on public sidewalk areas could not be for sale unless there is that sidewalk sale permit given through ADDA.
I really have to agree with Mr. Fitzgerald in that I don't think the problem now, I mean, I can see if in the future we have people dragging all sorts of stuff out there that's dangerous or something like that. I mean, I can see that if we start having a problem that we do something about it. But I think his store, I don't think the way that window is there, you can't tell what's in there if it's not in front of it. And I want that store to be occupied. And I think it's kind of interesting that there are things on the sidewalk from time to time at certain stores. I frankly think it looks a little, may not look so perfect, but it looks a little vibrant and like somebody alive is in there every day moving stuff. So I can see that in the future, if we are fortunate enough to have merchant after merchant after merchant lined up along our streets, now with all the professional offices that we're having lined up, that's not going to seem to be the case. But if we're ever fortunate enough to have that and it starts to be a problem, then I think we should do something about it. But I don't think it's, and we can keep all of this work that's been done on file, and if it starts to be a problem, then we'll do something. But I agree with him. I don't see that it's a big problem.
Well, we can still have the ADDA can still have the for sale when they do drag everything out. The merchants drag everything out in the street.
And that's really a very special time, those for sales. Yes, that's a good point.
Well, I just like to say we're talking about setting a standard, I think, here for what we want our downtown to look like. And whether it's going to be a, and everybody's got their own opinion of what they want it to look like. But, you know, the fact that you don't see a lot of it now doesn't mean that there won't be a lot of it out there. And I don't understand, Mr. Fitzgerald, maybe you know better than I because you're the owner, but all that traffic that comes by your area, your store, and there's always some parking area, parking spots out there. You don't have the same problem as some of them have on Richland and Larne. And you've got a sign up there that says what your store is. And I just don't understand why you wouldn't be getting the traffic if people really want to come in there and look at your antiques and buy antiques. That's something I just can't understand that, because it's a wide open street and there's parking and sign there and irregardless of if you have things out on the outside or in the store.
And I was on the building that I have on the building now. You're in your car and you cannot see. If you stop at the red light coming down Whiskey Bridge Town by the courthouse, because of all the trees and everything in the parkway, you cannot see it. So that's my point for the city. They just planted two trees in the front of the store 2 years ago now, I guess it was. And this year they're blossoming out and getting bigger. It's going to be more of an obstruction. And that's the same problem with a lot of schools, not just my school.
Right.
When they're driving down there, the only thing that catches their eye is I have a red painted, what we call jockey, lawn jockey. That red catches their eye. Or I might have the wicker set up there, which I have now. which that catches their eye, but people are paying attention to the drive. I don't have the advantage of walking around traffic that they have down the lawn. I took this to where I know that problem, but at the same time, I wasn't aware that we weren't going to put some merchandise out on the street,
mm-hmm.
out on the side. In fact, there was never any problem with this the first 2 years I was in there. Nobody ever said a word to me. And then they came down and redid the sidewalks. And I had a grassy area up against the front of the building, and then a sidewalk, and then a grassy area. Well, they took that grassy area out the front of the building and paved it all over. And now they're saying that that's all part of it, too, but I can't put anything on that part of it. So before that, nothing was ever said. For 2 years, I put stuff out there. And then I was issued a citation for it. This is Joe John saying, and I'm not saying that you can't compare the table. I don't want the table to go away. I utilize it. I go down there and I have it. But what I'm saying, though, is it's funny to me to say that's okay to do that. And block the traffic. And they do in certain places. They block the foot traffic. That's okay. So then just don't you put that bird back down. That's all I'm saying. And again, if the ordinance is written in such a way that 18 inches from the frame you're putting on, whatever, something that gives you a little bit of leeway to put some stuff out there, if you restrict the space, then you're not going to have that much out there. But some of the things, I don't know about, there's not too many people.
He's going to continue to speak. We need to get a little microphone.
That pot of flour.
Yeah.
But trust me, it's for sale. The art center may not have a sale sign on that big horse they have out there today, but I can go on the bet that I can buy that horse for the right amount of money.
Well, it's not, okay, maybe you could. It's not for sale, though. There's no tag on it that says this is for sale.
Dennis, if you're going to go ahead and keep talking, we need to get you on the mic here.
I want to hear from the Downtown Association, please. Tell us again, would somebody tell us what your proposal is? How many times and all that? A year. And I know it's here, but I would just
well,
have
I'm
to
Carla Cloud, and I'm
going to hear you say
the ADA.
It.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to say like I did at the last reading that all of this was implemented prior to my coming on board. So when I speak as the executive director, I can only go by what is written here and where it says that, you know, the ADDA feels it should be discouraged and only a limited number of times. That was before I came on board. I don't know how much of a majority that was since I have been on board. And I almost feel like saying this is Carla speaking, not the executive director, because I know that I have to speak for ADDA. But I have heard both sides, and I said before, I waffle on this one. I understand Mr. Fitzgerald's point. I also understand that we don't want the downtown to be, you know, tacky and have things hanging from the rafters and all that kind of thing. So I can only speak based on what you've got right before you, because this was done before me. And
well, there must be, and maybe Wade knows, that there must be a number of people that have suggested this. Your committee, you must have gathered information from a number of businesses.
And again, because it was prior to me, I don't know. I can tell you that there have been the same discussions of someone else had put something out on their in front of their business, and they were told that they couldn't have it. And so then it was, well, why can, you know, Dennis, or why can this person? So what I'm hearing is it was more of that kind of thing, that somebody on Lawrence was told they couldn't, and so why do the people on Park? And then it mushroomed. But again, this is all hearsay because this happened before me.
Not me.
Well, there's no secret that we've relaxed the ordinance. We didn't enclose it. Enforce it, because we were trying to think through it and figure out what we wanted to do. And y'all have come up with some guidelines.
And I did send out to our members and our board that this was going to be addressed tonight, and those that had interest to please come and speak. So, good. Wade probably has a lot more history than I do.
Well, we understand that, Carla. Thank you.
80 years. Who said 80 years? 40. For 40. Oh.
Seems like 80.
Wade Brody. I'm chairman of the Aiken Corporation and on the Downtown Development Association board. Looking back at how we got to where we are, and I'm not sure the exact number of sidewalk sales that were allowed formerly, maybe two, four. The new ordinance increases that to six and allows two additional requests from merchants. Now, all along, the prohibition, an ordinance prohibiting putting merchandise out on the street has been there. That's not a change in what's being proposed.
That's what we're saying. Yeah.
So as I see it, ADDA was enhancing the ability annually to have sidewalk sales. The other part of the situation, as I see it, is that if the city doesn't want to enforce the prohibition of items on the sidewalk, then you need to delete that from the ordinance.
Right.
I don't think we ought to let the two really confuse what we're talking about.
Oh, no.
But Wade, let me ask you, if we did delete it, do you think that there would become a plethora of this sort of
thing? My guess is that there would be a ton of merchandise on the sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
But only time would tell. I mean, most people realize that there is a prohibition at the present time.
Yeah. I must admit, I have a problem. Because as it looks right now, I don't mind it at all. I think we've got a lovely downtown.
We certainly do.
And I think I agree with Jane totally that it really adds to the character of the town. And Ed, I've lived in a lot of major cities around the world. And by golly, I've seen a lot of merchandise on the street.
But only one comment. There's a common sense aspect of all this.
Yes.
More, so to speak, a little bit shouldn't bring it a whole lot.
Yeah,
so that's really what we're talking.
I understand, but we haven't really even addressed that particular thing of in this ordinance. As
if you don't have some prohibition, I can put my suits out on the sidewalk and have a sidewalk sale every day during the year.
Smitty does that now.
Absolutely.
Smitty does that now. He gets by with it. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just closed out there. There's racks closed out there.
Yeah. I mean, not every day, but. But that's what we're talking about. Yeah,
if council decides not to approve this ordinance, and again, that's up to council as to what you want to do on this, then we will need to bring back to you the existing ordinance that we have and allow merchandise to be on display on the sidewalk at any time, because otherwise we'd be violating our own laws that we have. And if somebody came to us and said, why are you not enforcing the laws that are on the books? We would need to go ahead and bring something back to you.
But actually, there's a lot of good stuff in here that people have worked on for a long time.
I wonder if we couldn't reach some resolution here, win-win, by increasing the number of sales. I mean, suppose we had one a month. We're talking about six here. Suppose we had 12 here. 3 days every month? To me, that that's not going to satisfy Mr. Fitzgerald's situation totally, of course. But it does give some leeway for everyone to come out and show their things.
Did we ever think of having this apply only to two blocks of Lawrence Street and one block either side on Richland? It's the central downtown.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd get some arguments about that.
Well, we're going to get arguments for whatever we do.
I mean, if you're looking, there's two different things we're looking at here is the appearance issue and the safety issue. Mm-hmm. Both of them are a little bit different from one another. One is the appearance. If you leave it unrestricted, I think the concern is what will the future appearance look like? And that's hard to tell. From a safety standpoint, you want to allow enough sidewalk area open so that people could walk abreast safely through that area. From that standpoint, if you're going to allow merchandise to be placed there, then I think the ordinance we bring back to you says it has to be from the storefront to within maybe 3 feet or something that will allow some safety measures for people to get through, so it's not scattered across a 10 or 15 foot area. If you're concerned about appearance, then you almost have to go by what's currently. It's either all or nothing then on the appearance issue, because we can't police what is great merchandise out there versus what somebody might consider not the greatest merchandise.
But we could pass this, like Wade said. This would be the ADDA sanctioned sidewalk sales. Right? And then we could say, I'd like to try it for 6 months and see what happens if we don't slap them with a citation and see what we get.
I understand.
If it's bad, then let's do something.
And I don't want to pick on Mr. Fitzgerald's situation, but just so he understands and you understand and everybody else understands, if you pass it the way it is today, then all the merchandise that he currently has in front of the store would not be allowed to be in front of the store anymore except for sidewalk sales.
Don, let me ask you this. Dennis, do you not have a little bit of a setback with your store?
No.
He doesn't have any. You're off. You're totally flat? Okay.
That'd be unfair to the other people that haven't had on the pass.
Aren't we already talking about eight? Item six there individually?
Six by ADDA and two by individual.
So that's eight.
That's eight.
And again, Mayor, I do think that adding sidewalk sales is not really the issue. I think, like I say, Dennis, I don't think, has a problem with the sidewalk sale part of it. It's just a matter of the, for his purposes, is marketing his store. He feels like it is important to have items outside.
Having
a sidewalk sale each month would not, and I don't think any of the other merchants would care one way or the other thing. Actually, having more would take away from the sidewalk sales that we have.
You also asked, like, where would this apply? And we did put a map in here so you could see what the downtown area or the DB area, which kind of answers the question that Councilwoman Waters had is, you know, what about if it was just applies to Lawrence and Richland? Right now, the way it's written, it applies to the entire DB area, which goes all the way down to Union Street and all the way to Greenville. I mean, it encompasses a large, large area. So this would apply all the way to Union Street, all the way to Greenville.
Well, I tell you what, there's not a doubt in my mind that if we don't have anything, no restrictions, that we won't see a lot of stuff outside. To me, that's a given. That's a given. Once the word gets out that, hey, the city has relaxed this thing, there's no limitations, man, that stuff's going to be out there. And I think I'd be surprised if people don't believe that's what would happen. Because I think it would happen.
If you leave it wide open, you can go from your storefront all the way out to the sidewalk. You know, if you're not going portions.
Yeah.
Can block the whole sidewalk.
So I've got a real problem with not doing something. Yeah.
Yeah, I just addressed that you just said about if you don't do anything, it's going to blossom. Everybody, trust me, knows that they're not enforcing it right now. Everybody. And there's no problem.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know that that's true.
No. I talk to all the merchants on a regular basis. A lot of the merchants. They all are aware that they're not enforcing that right now.
Okay.
I mean, they may not come to the meetings, but they read the newspapers. And they go to those that are members go to the ADDA meetings. And so they're aware that it's not being enforced.
Okay. Well, we have somewhat of a disagreement here because Mr. Brody said the opposite, I think, just about, that probably a lot of them don't know that we're not enforcing it, and that's why they keep their merchandise inside. And I tend to believe that more than the other. Yes, sir, Mr. Kuepner.
Henry Krippner, 144 Crane Court. I see in the ordinance a reference to obstructing with gates and that type of thing. But I don't see anything that says you can't obstruct it with a flag on a pole hanging out over the sidewalk.
Yeah, that's okay.
Which happens in several places.
Yeah, that's
okay. And you have to walk around them or knock the flag on the side so you can get through. And it's not an American flag. I'm talking about an advertising flag. The other thing is, this says sidewalks. Does that also mean the pavers? Can they put things on the pavers or on the grass?
That's an extension of the sidewalk.
That's part of it. Okay.
And the street right away.
Okay. So it's not just sidewalk.
What part were you referring to with the obstruction?
The paragraph A.
Okay.
Talk about open gates or to swing upon it. You're talking about obstructing the sidewalk by opening a gate or that type of thing. But I think that it should also include those flags that stick out from the buildings, which make somebody walk around it.
Any open gate, absolutely. It should just say in general. It could be any obstruction, whether it's high, low, sideways.
Right. High or low.
Whatever.
Right.
That's a whole different subject.
Something at your foot level.
That's a different subject. That can get in the sign ordinance, I think.
Well, it's an obstruction, though. And that's not, I'm not talking about advertising. I'm talking about an obstruction, whether it sticks out from the building or whether it's on the ground. It's an obstruction, and I don't think we have a right to obstruct public traffic.
I agree with that, Henry. I just don't think that's what we're talking about tonight.
Okay.
On this.
That might be something we want to talk about later. This is a big enough subject right now.
All right. Okay.
Let's see if we get by this one.
Yeah.
Jane, I agree with you. Let's try what we've got and see what it works. Wanna?
Don't change the ordinance.
And maybe we need to look at the ordinance we have right now as well, Roger, and see if it doesn't say, I don't have a problem with stuff being out there as long as it doesn't obstruct the pathway, you know. But the ordinance we have now says they can't put anything out there, doesn't it?
That is correct. And that's why we have issued summonses in the past and actually had to take one person to court on it. But, and again, that's what brought up this whole issue, and that's why we're talking about it, because if we strictly go by what the current ordinance states, merchandise for sale cannot be put out there on the sidewalks. So it's either all or nothing. And if it's not this, then we'll come back with the current ordinance we have and make modifications to it.
You know, I think about the first reading was, what, last year, February? Over a year ago. I think we need more publicity on this. Because I'd like to really know what some of the other...
Every merchant has been contacted.
How were they contacted?
By ADDA.
Yeah, we contacted everybody.
But do they know what the ordinance says?
I mean...
All I told them was dealing with the sidewalk sale and items in the sidewalk, and if they were interested to come tonight.
I mean, I'm not too sure how much more we need to talk to them about it.
Well, I'm not either. I'm just saying I don't. Well,
actually,
go ahead, Dick. Sorry.
If you look at section 36.7, I can see why it wasn't being enforced before, because it's very obstruct or blockade. Doesn't say place upon, which then gives you some pretty wide latitude for interpretation. It actually permitted things to go on the sidewalk so long as they didn't actually obstruct or blockade. Why don't we just go back to that change, do everything else, which works out fine. Just don't change that paragraph, but it all works out. For the moment, and continue enforcing it the way we have it at the moment.
The original correct me if I'm wrong, I think the reason this all came to you.
I could see where the judge would have a problem with it, but
that's why I came to you to begin with.
It's been so long since we talked about this that I had forgotten the fact that was part of the problem. But as I see it, I can understand why it wasn't enforced.
But it was enforced. That's what we're saying.
But hit and miss.
Well, it was being enforced, but the judge was having a problem with what you're saying. He was having a problem interpreting.
Yeah.
He was finding ways to let people. I've got to let them off because there is a vagueness here or something along those lines. And so that's why we brought it back to you, so we could clarify this so the judge would be comfortable with his rulings.
It's sort of like the Constitution of the United States. The founders had some good ideas in the way they wrote the law to give you a little wiggle room. Anyway, I withdraw.
That's a good point. Just leave it obstruct or blockade.
To me, it makes sense.
Do something.
Muddy the water a little bit more.
Yeah, please do.
if you don't pass the ordinance tonight, if you just turn it down, that's the way it'll stay.
It'll stay, and then we're going to interpret. The interpretation is that anything that's obstructing or blockading the sidewalk, which is any merchandise on the sidewalk, is not legal.
If you aren't going to prohibit merchandise on the sidewalk, a compromise and maybe a trial would be to limit it to no more than 24 inches.
3 feet, whatever, from the storefront.
From the store, some distance from the storefront, so that when the city officer goes down to enforce it, he doesn't have to interpret whether or not it's a hazard or blocking the traffic, because he can put his ruler on it and say it's in violation.
You're in violation.
Right.
Leaving the ordinance just as it is and defining it to our police officers as 3 feet works.
I didn't care to take measure with their noise meter.
Yeah. And by definition, anything bigger than, deeper than 3 feet is an obstruction or a blockading of the sidewalk.
What? And that's what I was saying before. If it's an appearance thing, it's one. If it's obstruction, it's another thing. But we would just like to define this in some manner. And you really, as was just stated, you got three options. Nothing, allow anything, or just limit it to a certain area.
Well, if I'm going to vote for this, I like that idea, if it's a trial basis, with the understanding that, hey, we may come back to this thing and revisit it, and everybody should know it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I still think we're going to see a lot of stuff out there, which I personally don't like.
For whatever it's worth, in my opinion, everything y'all do is on a trial basis.
Well,
it can always be changed.
Is that a bench trial or a jury trial?
Well, you're absolutely correct.
And I'm not trying to be cynical either, but I mean, council always has the ability to revisit their ordinances.
Right.
I guess is what
right.
I'm trying to say.
Right. But I think my point, I guess, is I want people to know that. If we're going to put an ordinance out and say they can do this 24 inches or whatever, I think they ought to also know, be told, not in the ordinance necessarily, but the press and whatever, that, hey, this is a trial basis. Maybe not, but that's my thought.
And Ed's going to come back and say, I told you so.
See, man, I don't care if it's true. So what?
Okay.
So where are we?
If council, what I understand from council, that you want to possibly look at this compromise, then I would suggest we keep the ordinance as is, except under 36.7. It shall be unlawful for any merchant or other person to obstruct the street, sidewalk, within the corporate limits of the city of Aiken beyond 3 feet. Put that distance, if 3 feet seems reasonable.
I think.
He's saying two.
Who's saying two?
3 feet is almost as tall as I am.
That's a victory.
Yeah.
2 feet, 3 feet. Give us a number here.
I said 3 feet.
We've got to remember, too, we're going to have some newspaper racks out there that are going to be bigger than anything we've seen yet.
How about doing the measurement from the other direction?
It's got to be from the storefront.
Well, yeah, you got different sizes.
You got different sidewalks.
That's right.
Now, all the sidewalks are wide enough that I'm sure you could get at least 2 feet of merchandise out there, which would be a clothes rack would be 2 feet wide.
Okay, 2 feet.
2 feet.
I can live with that.
2 feet. We're through with this.
Mr. Bruce, you want to say something? Yes, he does.
Because I got to live with this. If we're going to say the 2 feet, that we not place the merchandise more than 2 feet beyond the
front of the
of the building, mm-hmm. I need to stick with place upon. We really, really, really need to get rid of obstruct and blockade. Just don't place stuff on the sidewalk more than 2 feet beyond the building front.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about those little billboards ADDA puts up? Don't they go out in the middle of the...
I thought we were talking about merchandise for sale.
Yeah.
You know, the little sandwich board for new businesses.
We have one sign for businesses that my understanding is, and this is far from my kind of board, but my understanding is that there's approval for that.
That actually was great.
I mean, there are other businesses, and Robin and I spoke with this earlier in the week, that there are people that have sandwich boards, but my understanding is that fall under this sign.
Yeah, we're going to deal with that later on.
That's the next subject we're going to tackle.
Because those aren't for sale. The signs aren't for sale.
We've heard you eat an elephant one little bite at a time, right?
Correct.
Okay. Dennis, does 2 feet work for you?
2 feet would be fine with me.
Okay. Cool. Okay. That's the answer.
Okay, we need a motion.
For the moment.
It can be I make that motion too.
All right. Anybody else want to speak? Forever hold your peace. It's back to City Council. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I would be pleased to try.
Oh, you're a brave guy.
Since I found obstruction and blockades, I move that we approve this ordinance on second reading with the following amendment to Section 36-7 concerning display of merchandise. It shall be lawful, unlawful in the down for any merchant or other person to place
upon the
street or sidewalk with it on any public right of way, street or sidewalk within the corporate limits of the city, articles of merchandise or other things for display or any of any kind.
With
further than 2 feet from the storefront.
That's good.
I think that makes it work.
It does.
Does that sound right? Richard, does that sound like something you can judge?
Okay.
Okay.
We've
got a second to that. Okay. Any other discussion? No more discussion. Okay. All in favor, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Okay. All right. Item 8, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the City of Aiken Employment Retirement Plan. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title. It's an ordinance amending Section 11 of the City of Aiken Employee Retirement Plan to amend the retirement benefit of the mayor and the members of council. Council asked us to look at this when at Horizons. It had been 10 years since any changes were made this section. This would essentially allow the consumer price indexing that we've had in the last 10 years of approximately 4.1% to be compounded or to raise it up 50%. Therefore, the increases would be as shown within the ordinance of going from the current $200 to $300 per month retirement for the mayor over 12 years and a monthly increase of $5 to $750 for each month of full service thereafter, and likewise for council members going up from $100 to $150 and from $5 to $750. You've had the first reading approval, and this is second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the City of Aiken Employment Retirement Plan for the mayor and city council members.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone like to speak on it, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move for adoption of this ordinance to amend the City of Aiken's employees' retirement plan as proposed in this ordinance.
Mr. Mayor, I'll second it. Okay. Any discussion?
Well, I fundamentally believe that elected officials should not have retirement plans at the federal level or the state level or the local level. I'm not just picking on us. I just think it's a mistake, and so I can't vote for this for that reason.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, a show of hands, please, for approval. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Two. So it passes 4-2. Okay. New business, approval of the developer's agreement for Woodside Phase 4. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Before you tonight is our first developer's agreement that introduces the transportation enhancement fee. As stated earlier in tonight's meeting, we had a project off of Banks Mill Road that required a left-hand turn lane. In that particular case, there is approximately 220 some units that were going to be built back then called Fox Run. The left-hand turn lane, in accordance with the design that was drawn up by Mark Graham and cost estimates, Larry Morris, our public works director, reviewed that, determined the cost was approximately $180,000. They paid us a lump sum fee for that work. And that's one way that developers could pay for these necessary improvements based on the development they have. We had one earlier tonight that we talked about that we'll be bringing back to you. When we look at the Woodside, their improvements are several miles, actually, away from their development that the traffic study proposed, necessitating some changes to the roadway configuration. This one becomes very difficult to determine what amount of money is needed, when it's needed, and how much is needed. All the traffic study talked about was a left-hand turn lanes needed off of Anderson Pond Road. We need money for redoing Anderson Pond Road. But again, all the study looked at was the turn lanes. So in looking at this and trying to come up with something that was reasonable and working with the developer Woodside, if you look at the last page and flip that open, you'll see that in actuality, the one turn lane, Whiskey Road at Chime Bell Church Road, it says that $54.76 will pay per house, would pay for that one. And the other one, that's at Silver Bluff and Anderson, would be $48.88. So it's really just a little over $100. But because of the future costs when these may be built and some other unknown factors and the fact that we do have costs at Anderson Pond Road, the developer Woodside agreed in the letter that I sent them, not to that cost, but to $210 per unit. They would be paying for this every quarter. They would add up the number of lots that they sold and then write us a check for $210 times the number of lots. We did all of our estimates based on 1,045 units or lots being sold eventually within that phase. So altogether, eventually we'll have over $200,000 coming into the city under the transportation enhancement fee. Their pro rata cost would probably add up to a little over $100,000. The actual cost of these turn lanes, if they get built, and I'm going to assume right now they will be over $400,000. But again, their pro rata share, because theirs is only a small portion of the amount of traffic that's going to be going on to Anderson Pond Road, would be based on $100,000. It's like, as we discussed earlier, and Councilmember Wells had pointed out, and the mayor and others, it's a compromise coming up with what we feel is a fair number to assess based on the traffic study and the ordinance that we have in hand. As the mayor pointed out, several changes are going to be made to that ordinance over the next season of time. That'll probably be going to the Planning Commission right now, I'd say this fall. They've moved through several items very quickly in the action agenda plan. So We have before you tonight an agreement with Woodside, which they are agreeable with, that they would pay $210, willingly pay towards the transportation enhancement fee, based on the agreement that it would be done on a quarterly basis on the number of lots that they sell. What we're talking about with Todd Bailey, his is going to be based on each lot as they get the building permit. So it's a little bit different for them than it will be for Woodside. And each one will have its own little bit of flavor to it.
So he has to pay it as he gets a permit?
As he gets a building permit, because he's not going to be selling lots to other developers. He's the builder in that particular case. Woodside's going to be selling lots to lots of different builders. And so we figured the best way to keep up with it would be as they sell the lots to different builders, they'd be paying us. But instead of on a monthly basis or on a almost a daily basis with Todd Bailey, because they'll as they get ready to build a house, they come in for a builder's permit. Woodside would be paying us on a quarterly basis. So again, I'm saying this so that each developer's agreement will be different. They're not all going to be the same. And each one will be based on what we feel is a fair number for that development. Some are going to be higher, some are going to pay for 100%, some are going to pay maybe less than 100%. In this particular case, it's going to be well over 100% based on the pro rata share.
Now, Woodside, you said, will be quarterly. Todd was going to be
on a permit basis, which, you know, he may come in 1 week and get one permit, next week he might get two or three permits. He's going to be doing probably about 30 homes a year in that development on Potter House Road.
And how much would home, what's that be doing?
Woodside would be paying $210 per lot.
And how many homes would they be?
1,045 potential lots.
But how many per quarter?
We don't know. It all depends on how many sales they have. Some quarters it might be, could be 10 and maybe 100.
And the difference is really also that the building permits come to us and the check comes to us when they apply for the building permit. With the lots, it's more an accounting thing because people buy lots and they don't build for years. So but it's when the lot is sold.
Right.
But if Todd is only building 30 homes a year, that's much lower. We're talking about over 1,000 versus 200 and some odd homes.
Correct. Woodside's paying, their left-hand turn lanes are on a pro rata share. The percentage of traffic that's going to be associated with those left turn lanes off of Silver Bluff Road and Whiskey Road that are going to be going to Woodside is a much, it's 100% in the development with Todd. 100% of those left-hand turns are going to go into his development. A far less percentage is going to be going to Woodside off of those two roads. Because it's a connector road that probably 80% of the traffic's going from point A to point B. It has nothing to do with Woodside. So Woodside has to only pay for their pro rata share of the amount of traffic that's turning left associated with Woodside development.
But Roger, if there's 1,000 or some odd homes going into a development, it's impacting somewhere.
But
and why do you
understand
just
that of the 1,000 homes in Woodside, the majority of them are going to go out through the village or the extension of Richardson Lake Road, not down to Henderson Pond Road and then to some other location.
And who's going to pay for all that work when they exit at the village?
Woodside is, 100%. They're paying 100% for a traffic light at that intersection and the roadway connection from the gate to Silver Bluff
Road. So that's something they're already adding to the cost of each house, right?
That's correct. Actually, it's to houses, but also to the village
area. To the village itself. It just doesn't seem to be fair to charge him $200
That's what I'm saying. Each one is going to be different based on their pro rata share. Potter House Road, pro rata share, 100% of the left-hand turns are going into that development alone. Woodside, a very small percentage is going to be turning off of Silver Bluff Road or Whiskey Road. They're going to travel down Anderson Pond Road, eventually get to the gate at Woodside, and then turn into Woodside itself. And that's why it each one of these may look like, well, this is this really fair? Is it not fair? When we start getting to some developments on the Powderhouse connector between Whiskey Road and Powderhouse, and that development that's going to occur in there eventually, remember, that's a connector road also. So the percentage of traffic that's going to come from those developments is only going to be a pro rata share of the full amount that will be on that roadway eventually. So each one will have a different fee based on their contribution traffic-wise to those improvements that are going to be needed.
I guess where I draw the confusion is that, as Dick mentioned, Pine Log Road, the Powderhouse Road, and the impact, and then we're talking about Silver Bluff and Whiskey Road, and drawing those two axes, just drawing the difference here. It's still, I'm just looking at a centralized 1,000 plus units.
If we had done this, let's say in 2001, Woodside Phase 3 annexed the city. If in 2001 we had the traffic management ordinance at that time, they would have been paying a transportation fee just like this to help for probably some of the improvements on Silver Bluff Road and some of the other things that are going to be needed in the future. But we didn't have it at that time. Now that we have it in existence, they'll be paying towards some of these improvements.
That doesn't seem much.
$210 actually is twice the amount of what the calculations come up with. It's actually double. And the reason I doubled it and the reason they agreed to it is because there are some unknowns. And they felt $200 was something they certainly could bear and live with.
You really have to do. You really have to look at the facts of each situation, as Roger says. I admit
it's the same confusing.
Thing. It does look strange, but you know, when you look at the facts,
I don't want to charge Todd anything.
And so many of those folks that are living in the new areas are going to be going back up to get to East Gate.
The trip
going back that way, a lot of them.
The traffic ordinance itself says that a pro rata share will be paid from that kind of thing.
Right. So, right. Okay, any other discussion on this issue? Any other discussion? Hey, guys, any other discussion? Do we have a motion and a second?
I'll move that we have approved the developer's agreement for Woodside Phase 4.
I'll second it. Any discussion? Any more discussion?
Just one thing, this is not a confusion, but this is the principle that we'll be looking at and using with developers in the future. And that's the whole thing here. It's more the principle as to how we'll be approaching this. There's going to be some developments that won't pay any traffic enhancement fee because there are not going to be improvements associated with their development. Then there's others that, like with Todd, that may be a lot higher. And so each one is looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Let me ask you a question. In Jasper County, you remember we talked about that.
Right.
Now, didn't they set a fee?
$5,000 per lot. But that covered schools, recreation site, police, fire, and roads.
So I wasn't talking about the amount as much as the fact that they set the same fee.
Yeah, it was countywide.
It's an impact fee, however.
Oh, okay.
This is not an impact fee.
And Jane, we should have done that 10 years ago before we did Woodside.
Well, they don't have the development we've had.
Yeah.
No. Okay, we've got a motion and a second. All in favor? Approval of this? Show of hands.
I'm reluctant.
On passage and
I want to rescind Todd's dollars.
Item 2 on a new business, a resolution accepting Union Street from Richland Avenue to Park Avenue and the proposed railroad depot. Mr. Ledoux, please.
Yes, sir. Just as we discussed in the work session, the fact that we were going to go ahead and ask the Highway Department to accept Marlboro Street at the last meeting we had, we talked about the railroad depot and to make the railroad depot work, to provide the parking, the landscaping, and the amenities that go with it, Union Street needs to be closed in the northbound direction from Park Avenue to Cumberland. From Cumberland north, it would be a two-way road. Right now, it's just one way going north. The southbound lane would be changed to two lanes in both directions. So what we're asking tonight is to approve this resolution, which will allow us to petition the state to take over the maintenance of Union Street. We would work out the details as to the closure of this and the changing from one-way to two-way. And it's also asking City Council to accept the railroad depot, the two dining cars, and the associated improvements upon their completion. So it's really a two-fold resolution, one to for the acceptance of Union Street and the other to the acceptance of the improvements once they get built through the fundraising. City of Aiken.
So tell me what that means. I wasn't at the meeting, so...
Okay. At the last meeting, we had a presentation by the committee. Tim Simmons made a presentation. They're going to be starting the fundraising campaign, and that fundraising campaign is to try to raise a little over $3 million. The City of Aiken has already made an obligation of $50,000 per year for a five-year period. The county has made some obligation. Our money has come out of the accommodation taxes, so it is for the county. The rest of the money they're planning on raising. With that, they're planning on building a replica of the former railroad depot. They plan to install some track to put these two dining cars, which they'll be refurbishing. Each of the dining cars will hold 32 persons per car. They'll be refurbished to their original condition. And then between the two railroad cars and the depot will be an area that could be used for events. The city, should council approve the acceptance of it, would be able to hold events there and rent out the facility for other events. Now, saying that, the railroad depot itself is not a large building square footage. If you put tables and chairs there, it could fit a group of probably 30 to 40 people in there. Seated.
Is it 2,000 square feet?
It's approximately like that. But there's going to be a columns, certain columns that are going to limit some of your seating space, and there's going to be some, at least one office down there.
I guess where I'm getting to, Roger, so this is going to revert to council to operate this. Is that
yes, they're asking City Council to accept it, and then we would operate. We would rent it out just like we do Rye Patch. Or like the conference center downstairs or any other facility that we have. In the analysis that Glenn Parker did, it looks like it would be close to a break-even situation. Assuming it's rented, I believe it was Glenn, 50 times a year, based on the rental rates that they had.
Say yes.
Glenn is shaking his head there for the records.
Let's go to the record, please.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Okay.
Well, and he said that the overhead would be at least $26,000 a year, they figured.
I believe that's...
which if they rented it 50 correct. Times yeah. a year, they'd have to rent it for over $500 every time they rented it to get $26,000, right? I mean, Leslie, I'm just trying to remember all the things he said about what was going to pay for what. By the way, what about Norfolk Southern? Are they going to have to buy this land from them? Are they going to donate this land, or do we have any idea?
If I recall correctly from the records that Mac McLaren and Owen Sheets have pulled together, the City of Aiken owns the property that's from whether it's that spur goes to the north back towards Park Avenue where all these activities would be placed. The property that we do not own is Giles Park. That property is owned by Norfolk Southern. We did ask to purchase that, and they said no. There since has been some discussions with them at a higher level with some fairly prominent individuals, and there's supposedly some rethinking on their part of either giving us the land or selling it in the future.
So, in 1987, Giles Park was not fit for much at all.
No, I know.
And we went in and have managed to make that piece of property enjoyable for the community, but it was just unfit.
Is this building going to be brick?
I believe it's going to be a replica of what was there before, which was a wooden-sided building. Am I correct? Somebody nod your head. There's three nods out there for the record.
I don't believe $26,000 is going to begin to cover the overhead on maintaining that building and two dining cars. I just don't.
Yeah. Now, the cost of maintenance is just the current year's operation and maintenance of the facility. There's no money in here for depreciation, to re-roof it in the future, to paint it in the future. That money is not there in those numbers that Glenn put out.
I think there's some other numbers you need to take into consideration. We all do. And Leslie, I know you haven't had a chance. You've been so busy. Maybe it's a lot of information on this.
But and also now there's going to be offices located, at least
well,
one.
It may be. Maybe.
Our tourism office, we're looking at, that would be a fairly desirable location to hold that office. So so there would be an indirect impact or benefit to the city for that. And the numbers that we're talking about is just the rental facility. I think the big thing that council has to consider, and you can't put a number on, is the economic impact to that area. If you look at the drawing of where the downtown business zone is located, that's on the eastern fringe. And as Ms. Price said, I recall when I came to the city of Aiken, Giles Park was not a place you wanted to go to during the daytime, let alone the nighttime. And this will change forever that side of the city and draw more business and more development. And really, I think there will be a renaissance in that area.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Not to mention historic value.
Right. With that, Mr. Mayor, I move that we accept this resolution accepting Union Street from Richland Avenue to Park Avenue and the proposed railroad depot.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor?
Opposed?
Opposed, two. Passes 4-2.
Now, that'll take 2 to 3 months probably before we'll get permission from the Highway Department to have that roadway, but we'll start that process.
Okay, it's all on the agenda. We are adjourned.
You do have a meeting next Monday night.
Yep, special meeting.
5 o'clock.
Thank you for that.